Okay, well, it is 11 o'clock, so I will call this meeting to order. So this is a continuation of the February 1st meeting of the Planning and Zoning Commission to discuss a conditional use approval for a restaurant brewery pub at 2100 Coastal Highway. This meeting is going to be conducted in the form of a workshop. We're not intending to solicit or accept public input. We felt that it was, as a planning commission, important for us to be able to sit amongst ourselves and discuss our understanding of the application and to review the proposed draft ordinance approving the conditional use request and see if we have all of the information we need and are clear on the codes and regulations that might apply to this. And so what I would like to do is to address some of the questions that have been raised both by members of the commission and by the public leading up to this meeting, and to ask Fred, who is the town attorney, to address the commission's authority to act on this application and possibly to approve this application. Oh, by the way, this meeting is being recorded. The recording will be posted on the web as soon as possible after the meeting. I ask you to turn your cell phones off or to ring or vibrate or something. And before you leave, please sign in on the sign-in sheet with a name that's clearly legible and a contact, either telephone number or email address. Fred, thank you.
Oh, you'd like me to respond to?
Yes. Yes.
To any particular?
Yes, the authority of the Planning Commission to act on this application, in particular the brewery pub component of it, and to approve or possibly approve this application. Mm-hmm. Okay, as a conditional use in the town of Dewey Beach.
Well, generally speaking, the Planning Commission, as you know, as I think many of you have been associated with the Planning Commission for some time, plays a necessary role in the adoption of ordinances to allow zoning changes and to allow for conditional use permits to be issued. The Planning Commission, in this case, was referred this question and is asked to offer a recommendation. So that's your role, to gather the evidence that the Planning Commission sees fit and is legally appropriate to make a recommendation to the Commission for final action on the Certificate of Compliance / Conditional Use application this applicant to allow for the operation of a restaurant that includes a use that is referred to as a brewery pub or a beer brewing function as an accessory use to a restaurant. I know there are more specific questions that you'd like me to address. I don't know how. I'm not sure how I can address them to your satisfaction before they're asked. There are many nuances to this, and I expect to discuss those with you thoroughly today.
Well, I think that the A point where we kind of got wrapped up in can we or can we not had to do with the brewery pub as an accessory use. It doesn't, I mean, it's not explicitly called out in the code as an accessory use.
Right.
Some of members of the public have raised the issue, do we have the authority to approve this? And so we were looking for
right.
you to take that as an issue off the table at
okay.
one way or the other so that we know, so we don't spend the rest of the 2 hours discussing that
right.
issue.
And it's a threshold question, as you're pointing out, Mr. King. It's a threshold question, and any group such as yourselves is interested in definite answers to questions like these. I had given an opinion, I call it an informal opinion to the commission, that this would not necessarily be an inappropriate use as an accessory use to a restaurant in that zoning district. I would not withdraw from that opinion. I'm happy and intend to discuss it here with you more thoroughly today. I would have to offer a disclaimer of sorts that I can give you my opinion. My opinion does not necessarily end the discussion that opponents of this project could ultimately appeal a decision, and this question could wind up in courts. So my job is to anticipate how the courts would look at it. And I think the courts would more likely look at it this way. And that is that this is not the first brewery pub in the state of Delaware. That while we do not explicitly authorize brewery pubs in Dewey Beach, brewery pubs are recognized as an accessory. I don't think that term is used, but that they are recognized in the Delaware Code as a licensing for licensing purposes. They're recognized by the state code, and they're required to be a secondary function to a restaurant. When you're looking at questions of accessory uses, it's not enough to say that you can't have an accessory use if it's not specifically authorized, because accessory uses are often too numerous, too varied, for drafters of a zoning ordinance to anticipate. So in that sense, it's something of a question that is not going to necessarily be answered with a definite yes. You're going to be asked, and the commissioners are going to be asked, to look at whether this restaurant, which is an appropriate conditional use in Dewey Beach, is essentially a restaurant. And if it is, if the question is answered in such a way as to say that adding this particular function to the restaurant does not change the character of the restaurant to such an extent that you can't call it a restaurant, then I believe the courts, who often recognize property rights, to an extreme, I believe the courts would find that this would not be an inappropriate use in Dewey Beach if this question were ever brought to the bench. So accessory uses, again, are not, you're not going to find a list of all the possible accessory uses. There is a standard in the code that defines these brewery pubs and says that they a brewing operation associated with a restaurant, and consequently, there's some, I think, reason to think of the courts would apply the same logic here and find that an accessory use such as this is permissible.
Thank you. So the short summary is that we should proceed, that we have your opinion, we may have our own opinions. Ultimately, if there's a question, this would be determined by the courts, and so we should take this threshold issue off the table and move forward.
Yeah, my advice to you is to look closely at the characteristics of the brewery pub operation as a whole. Ask yourselves, what about the intensity of this use needs? What about this particular use needs to be restricted in such a way to protect the public? I think that's your challenge. I don't think this is a question of labels. I don't think labeling this manufacturing would be a satisfactory basis for the courts to just deny this application. Calling it a factory, calling it a manufacturing plant, referencing terms like chemicals and processes and whatnot, I don't think they're going to be very persuasive to the court if this matter ever ended up before a judge.
Thanks, sir. And so one of the other issues that we got hung up on at our last meeting deals with whether or not the site plans as submitted meet the building officials' requirements for redevelopments of the same scope and scale. And so the building official is here as an ex officio member of the Planning Commission. And so, Bill, did the plans that submitted meet your approval? Did you get any additional amendments or updates or any further discussion with the applicant on the plans?
Well, as far as the plans go, there was the discrepancy in the one from Landtech and the one, this large plan right here, done by Dave Bowen and Verdell. And I met with the applicant, and we discussed that. And the fact is, the property right there is on a zero side yard setback, which is, according to the code in Dewey, commercial properties have zero side yard setbacks within the, you know, interior yard. So as far as that goes, but I mean, that's where the discrepancy, I think everybody came way looking at the two plans, because I was, a little... questionable about, one plan to the other also. But after visually looking at it and understanding the Landtech plan and understanding what's there now, I understand it still it meets the requirement of, our zoning code in that respect.
Now, what
are non-conforming setbacks to what the zoning code calls for today, but this is a present building that meets the criteria of the older zoning code of setbacks.
But everything else included in the plan, in the site plans that you got, meet your requirements?
Meets town requirements in that respect, yes.
Okay. Now, there was some question about the little building that's kind of in the back on the north side that's tacked onto the applicant's property, whether that's their building, or is that the belonging to the adjacent property?
That's what I said. I think the applicant could probably discuss what the plans are right there, but that is definitely going to have to be clarified, I think, before the town says that you can do this or you can do that. But that those two plans do show a discrepancy with the question before my But as far as their property goes, what they're doing is in the property that they have designated as their property, the operations.
Okay. Thank you.
I have a question on the bill.
Yes.
Bill. We had some questions regarding
the preliminary site plans and procedures for approval of site plan. And I think Mr. Paraskevich brought it up at the last meeting, had to do with FEMA certifications and what have you. And I think he was referring to 18576 for preliminary site plans and certification and what have you. The question that I have is, this is a, when we apply that section of 18575-76, is that for what types of construction or renovation? Does it include renovation or is it for ground up construction?
Well, in the years I've been here, it's never included renovation. It only includes new structural where you go down, right down to the ground and start from the ground up is where that criteria has to be met. And all the things that are mentioned in that section of the code.
So that wouldn't apply, in your estimation, to this project?
I don't see it applying to this project.
Jim, is your question about the site plan requirements in 18576, or is your question about substantial improvements? So that's a different question, Bill. I mean, the question is, does...
Well, it's both, actually.
Bill answered part of it.
The question is substantial construction. And substantial construction, at least the way I've read the definition, is it includes the structure, basically the structure of the building and renovations of the building that include supports and walls and so forth. But finishings and equipment, colors, paints, and that stuff, does that apply to this?
When I've ever been involved in any projects, no.
Okay.
Those type of things don't get involved in the final.
So that wouldn't be part of a substantial renovation?
Well, substantial renovation also comes into effect that if you, in the structure itself, putting, you know, the actual building itself, that's where the substantial improvements come in.
Well, let me make it even more clear. This, the brewery section that the gentleman had put in, the equipment, would that be included as part of substantial?
No, because it's removable. It's not part of the stationary part of the building.
Thank you.
It's all removable.
All right. Thanks.
Can I follow up with this?
Sure.
Just, Bill, confirm what you have that I might not have to make these comments. You say that everything that they're doing, proposing to them, falls on their property. I don't have a recent survey signed by a surveyor that verifies it. Do you have one?
Just the two that you've seen. That's all I have.
Okay, what I see is something that was done in 1998 for whatever reasons. I'm just saying what I see. It's the property, but I don't know why it was prepared or who the signature is and if he's still even around. So it's a document that we were given that was done in 1998 that is all we have to rely on right now. And if I were to call up that surveyor or ask the applicant to bring him in and testify to the accuracy of that, can they do it? Or do you have something more recent?
That's what I said. The question I had with him is that we probably would need a more accurate, you know, survey done at all.
So the statement you made about them doing all their improvements on their property is based upon this 1998 something that we have. Is that right? The 1998 plan. You made a statement that all the improvements that they're making are happening on their property.
Well, in the interior part of their building that's on their
property. Well, the interior would also affect the exterior because the exterior, if it's over the property line, the interior is over the property line.
Well, no, from what I've seen on the plans.
On these plans, it's presumably.
Yeah, they're being done on the inside, not on the outside.
So the 1998 plan is what you're referring to, so if we could get that applicant in here to verify that, that would be nice.
Yeah.
Okay. The other thing is, you say that, in answer to Jim's questions, that you've never had to deal with something like this, or it doesn't pertain to anything you've ever done in town, I don't know the exact word, but have you ever reviewed an application for a brew pub to be put into a building like we have now, where it used to be a coffee shop, where now they're putting in a manufacturing process? Have you ever reviewed anything like that before in town?
No.
So that you haven't seen it before?
No, not in this town.
Okay. So it's fair to say that you haven't seen this before?
No.
I just want to clear up if you've ever seen one before.
No, I've never seen one.
Okay. Okay.
Okay, so I would like to, again, try to follow along the agenda a little, and we'll come back to what I know are some more questions. So I want to make sure that to some extent we are on the same page with regard to what this application deals with, and Mike, you started to peel that onion. As I see it, and I... we can discuss any of these points. They are doing exterior modifications that are limited to doors and windows. You know, yes, they're going to paint, but I mean, basically, they're going to exterior modifications, doors and windows. The representation is that all of the internal modifications are going to be limited to the existing commercial space, that they are not doing any changes to the residential space, nor changing the use of the residential space, that the deliveries and the trash pickup will use the existing parking pad, I'll call it a parking pad, the parking area that fronts on Salisbury Street, that any and all improvements to the property represent less than 50% of the present value of the property. I know that that's something that I assume, Bill, you would be required to make a determination on when you see the building plans, and Sussex would be required to make when they get the building plans for approval. But that is the representation from the applicant, that they guarantee that there will be no odor or disturbing noises coming from the brewery operation. It's going to be a 110-seat restaurant with a liquor license, replacing a 110-seat restaurant that currently does not have a liquor license. They have voluntarily agreed to close at 11 p.m., that they are intent on conducting full operations of a brewery pub as permitted by Delaware Code, with an annual production up to 4,000 barrels of beer a year, 75% of which can be sold for consumption off-site. From the public record, we have strong support for a restaurant that serves craft food paired with craft beer. We have a strong opposition from the public on manufacturing. And from the applicant, we have lots of analogies to the operations of Dogfish Head Brewery in Eats and Rehoboth. And I know that some of those analogies have raised concerns, in particular with Marty Seitz, who is not here today, about trash and delivery of storage and raw materials and waste and propane storage and refrigeration and things like this that are clearly evident on the exterior of the Dogfish Head property that are not represented anywhere in the schematics that we've seen today. Is that a fair assessment of where we are, or is there anything that I have missed? Is there anything we need to discuss about our understanding of what their proposal is?
No, I think that's a fair assessment.
That's good.
So from, I know that from my perspective and in preparing the draft ordinance to approve this operation, I was under the mistaken assumption that the town had the ability to regulate operations of an ABCC licensed establishment, and Fred and I have talked a little about this, and Fred has spoken with a commissioner of the ABCC, and I think it's important to, you know, I think this again is another, Fred, as you said, a threshold issue, and I'd like you to address whether the town has any rights to monitor or regulate or impose restrictions on the operation of an ABCC licensed establishment, of which we have both a restaurant liquor license and a brewery pub license from the ABCC.
Thank you. I can confirm representations of law made by the applicant's attorney, I believe in a letter dated February 13th, that the exclusive jurisdiction, it's strictly the jurisdiction of the state to regulate the sale and manufacture of alcoholic beverages. It's very clear, and it's interpreted to a very extreme fashion that municipalities, counties, and whatnot have very little authority in this area. A county can adopt an ordinance that would make it illegal to sell or manufacture alcohol throughout the county. A county or a municipality can say that all alcohol serving establishments must close by a certain hour. That would apply to all the licensees of the ABC equally. That would be a permissible area within which a municipality could regulate. But beyond that, there's very little authority to the municipality of Newport Beach. There are a number of issues that had been discussed, I think, at your previous meeting that are designed quite appropriately to ensure that this establishment will be operated as a restaurant. It will be primarily a restaurant now and in the future, and it's quite appropriate for the Planning Commission and for the public and for others to be very concerned about this point. But the way the law reads, it grants the authority for making such a determination. Again, it's a requirement of a brewery pub that it exists as substantially as a restaurant. The test for that is as determined by the commissioner of the ABCC. So the consequence of that is that it's really legally impossible for anyone else to exercise the authority granted the commissioner, because it's the commissioner's determination. So if you were to impose the same restrictions or attempt to impose the same restrictions on the applicant that the applicant needs to comply with to obtain and maintain a license with the ABC, you would not be in a position to enforce them, because that enforcement authority is strictly within the jurisdiction of the commissioner of the ABCC. And furthermore, the commissioner is restricted in terms of what sanctions he can impose in the event of violations. So those restrictions, again, they apply to him. They apply to the ABCC, and it doesn't work that we would attempt. It doesn't work legally for a municipality to attempt to impose those same restrictions and enforce them locally.
Questions?
Mm-hmm. I do have a question. I understand that clearly. Does the town decided that they would go to the commissioner of the UEC and ask him to make a condition, ask him to make a conditional approval of this license. Is that a possibility that you can do?
I believe it is. If a substantial number, actually it's hardly a substantial number, but it, the public and the town have the right to appear at a hearing wherein the commissioner would grant the permit that's applied for, the brewery pub permit. And at that time, the commissioner would take testimony from the public, and I believe you could attempt to persuade the commissioner to impose reasonable conditions on the applicant. So I certainly can't guarantee you that they would be adopted.
Right. So we got it the way I understand it, and the town can't change the brew pub laws written by the state code.
It can't change them and it can't enforce them.
So anything that we decide on, if we set in a conditional use, any limitations on the capacity of brewing or whatever is in the code, we can't change that.
That's right.
But the town could go to the hearing and request the commission to approve based upon the conditions of what the town would like to impose. And the commissioner has authority to do that if he chooses to.
That's a question I hadn't anticipated. Could you ask the commissioner to impose a more restrictive, a greater restriction on production than is permissible under this?
Well, anything, any changes, production or whatever that the law, that the state law allows, but for this particular application.
Well, I mean, certainly you can ask. That's not much of an answer. You could appear and you can ask, and you could say you could ask the commissioner to take an affirmative step to ensure that this will be primarily a restaurant. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about what makes a restaurant a restaurant. I can get back to you with a letter, and I suspect, I will say the ADCC is very responsive to these questions. They're very quick to respond. I could get a letter to you asking whether there's any example of a licensee such as this, but any licensee as a result of the hearing process being required to submit to limitations or conditions that are more restrictive than are expressed in the code.
So let's take a different approach to that, because, I mean, in terms of the process, before they go to the ABCC for their licensing as both the liquor license for the restaurant and the brewery pub, they need to have an approval from the town.
That's to zoning.
So for the town to say, we approve this without the restrictions, and then to go to the ABCC and say, please put these restrictions in, doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But there is a different way to address some of these issues, and Fred and I talked some about this yesterday. If the applicant voluntarily agrees to certain restrictions, to operate under certain less intense conditions than approved by the ABCC, those can be put in and, I believe, enforced by the town. Fred, would you care to comment on that?
I believe so. Of course, what you're talking about now is there are a couple of examples where it appears the applicant is willing to impose conditions upon itself. I think we talked at length already this morning that we can't impose those conditions on them over their objection. To what extent are those conditions enforceable in the context of their conditional use permit? Now, I think they'd be hard-pressed to argue you can't tell us to close at 11 after we agreed and made our permit application conditioned upon closing at 11. So I would say that that would work, but it's something of a dangerous area, I think, to tread in.
So for the benefit of my fellow commissioners, I got an email. I got it this morning. It might have been sent yesterday from Mr. Bunting saying that they are willing to and want to close at 11 p.m. So that would be a voluntary condition, possibly, that they are willing to restrict the brewing from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, and that they are willing to restrict the brewery operations to a maximum of 2 brews per day.
Did you say 5 a.m. to 9?
I'm sorry, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Did I say 5 a.m. to 9 p.m.? No, it's 9 to 5, you know, the standard work day. And Fred, so my question to you is, if they then sell, if the current owners, well, I guess if the applicant transfers ownership, then they would have to come back for a new conditional use application. My question was going to be whether these voluntary conditions would transfer to the new owner.
I believe they would.
They would?
They would, yes.
But they would also have to, I believe, come back for a...
Under your certificate of compliance statute, there's a requirement when there's an actual change as opposed to a change from three owners to an LLC or something. But if there's a bona fide change in ownership, then the certificate of compliance requirements are requires that they resubmit.
So your opinion is that we could include these three conditions on production and hours of operation on them and reasonably expect that they would be enforceable by the town, but no other applications regarding production or sales?
I would say any future owner would have the right to... any future owner would have the same rights that the present owner has, but not more rights. And your certificate of compliance process requires that they resubmit as well. So I don't think a new owner can say that. Certainly under a conditional use, what you're saying is that this use is permitted pursuant to these conditions. If the present owner or future owner were to attempt to operate outside of those conditions, then an enforcement action would follow.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Jim.
What I'm hearing you say is the enforcement process, we have nothing to do with it, and the approval process, we can approve a brewery pub, but that's about it. Now, the question I have is, you say we can if we chose to, the state or locality can pass an ordinance prohibiting it, too, if they wanted to, correct? Or prohibiting alcohol
no,
or...
No, not a municipality. Only a county.
Okay.
A county could actually say we're going to be a dry county. I'm explaining to you how limited you are.
Okay.
So a county can't say that we're not going to have tap rooms in our county. Now, a municipality can't say we're not going to have tap rooms in our county per the ABCC. When I'm talking about a different license.
Right. Let me phrase it in a different way. Can the town, if it so chooses, approve, limit the numbers of days to brewing?
No.
So it's all or nothing is really what you're saying, with the exception of whatever they agree to.
I think so. That's kind of a different category.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So we come, and this is all hypothetical though, so we come to the conclusion that we would like to see it instead of 7 days a week or whatever, we want to just see it maybe 3 or 4 days a week. And if we can't get an agreement, then we also can make a recommendation. We think this is either for this applicant or not for this applicant.
So again, but my challenge to you again is going to be that you focus on whatever characteristics of this use you find too intensive for the location. Mm-hmm. I would urge you not to say because the applicant won't voluntarily limit his production to something we see appropriate, we cannot recommend approval. I think that's a suspect result. If on the other hand you say that the amount of brewing, the operation of brewing to the maximum capacity is permitted by state code is such that it's too intensive a use for the location, it's going to produce too much odor, too much traffic, you're going to use too many of our scarce resources, it's too big a nuisance, too much noise, not appropriate, then that's a reasonable basis for a negative recommendation. But saying...
No, I'm just looking at what our authority is.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it's complicated. It's a nuance.
Well, it seems like we can regulate hours based upon what we think might be in the best interest of the town and the municipality.
The commissioners could pass an ordinance that says every ABC licensed establishment must close at 11. But you can't say that this one must close at 11, and that one can stay open until 1. You can't tell this guy, you can't tell one of them that they got to close by 11 without telling them all that.
Gotcha.
Otherwise, you're into the jurisdiction of the state.
Okay.
And just also, since it's, I think, in the conditions, I'm not sure if it's still in there or not. At one point, it was in there that, I don't know who put it in there, but requiring them to stay open all year was in one of the conditions, and I saw that. Could that be legally enforced? To stay open?
As a restaurant, so you're telling the restaurant they have to stay open year round.
That was in the conditions, and when I read them, and I just wondered if that was enforceable.
I don't know that condition would. I don't know that condition implicates the jurisdiction of the state so much as it is questionable because you don't require any other restaurants to be open year round in order to be open at all. So I'd say that's suspect. You're certainly not telling them. Would your concern then be that they would continue their manufacturing operation but have the restaurant closed?
I don't know. I wasn't part of putting the conditions together, but it was in there. That's why I wanted some explanation.
Okay. If that's the public policy behind it, that we think you need to be substantially a restaurant, I think that's the exclusive jurisdiction of the state.
Of the state.
Mm-hmm.
So are you saying that a statement when we have in item 31, operations of the food service portion of the restaurant shall be year-round, that's a suspect condition?
The way that's worded, I like the way it's worded, but I guess it does raise a question that are you trying to say... are you trying to impose this to ensure that they will be primarily a restaurant as opposed to some other operation? I think the applicant's intention is to stay open year-round. I think it's a bit suspect to tell anyone in the business that they can't close their doors. So I would be concerned about that.
In that item 31, I mean, we get the last statement might be a little less suspect. You know, the intent of the statement might have been.
Well, right, and I mean, no, you go ahead, Mike.
Well, it says if the restaurant operations are curtailed from those mentioned above, we could say if the restaurant is closed, brewery operations shall be curtailed. That's probably what they were trying to say. You can't can't be out there brewing beer while the restaurant is closed. I think that's what they're trying to say in that item 31. Is that your understanding, David?
The part of the intent of the year-round is that the applicants stipulated that they represented that they wanted to be use air quotes, a year-round business.
Right.
And the comp plan talks about trying to encourage, you know, businesses that might be of a type and nature that would be year-round. And the question is, what does year-round mean?
Yeah, exactly.
And we get into this whole question of what year-round means.
Right.
And so that was, you know, some draft language about what year-round means, 7 days a week during the summer season, and then the state code actually requires a restaurant to be open 6 days a week if it's open on Sunday, which I hadn't realized until I started looking at the state code, the applicant has represented in prior submissions that they were willing to not operate their brewery function if the restaurant were not open on those days that it was not open. So, you know, that kind of resolves some of that. But I understand that, you know, to some extent you can't force a restaurant to serve breakfast or stay open in January when it, but that did say they could be closed for, you know, what, 6 weeks? I can't remember what the exact language was during the winter, and maybe it'd say 8 weeks or 12 weeks or something, but the notion to have continued operations if in fact we're making concessions to permit a brewery pub kind of operation.
Okay, so what I understand with gave us a brew pub is allowed to manufacture beer, sell it off-site. I'm just kind of summarizing so that we know what a brew pub can do, mm-hmm. and we have no authority to change it. Well, let me just point out what I understand they can do. Mm-hmm. They can manufacture beer on site. Mm-hmm. They can sell it to a customer that's eating a meal.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to conform to all the other ABC things where you can't stand up and drink, things like that. You can't stand up and drink, I believe. They can sell it.
No, within the designated area.
Okay. Yeah. They can sell it off-site to a customer. In other words, if a customer's had dinner there and they order a growler and take it off-site.
Mm-hmm.
And they can manufacture beer and sell it wholesale to anybody in the state or tri-state area or whatever, as long as the restaurant is operating.
Where did you get wholesale, though?
I mean, that's in the code. They can sell up to 75% of their production.
Manufacture not only to the customers who are eating meals there, but they can package it in whatever form they want, bottles or kegs or whatever, growlers, and they can have somebody bring it, come in and pick it up and deliver it wholesale to a package store or another restaurant and sell it. Is that correct? They can do that?
I believe that's correct.
And we have no jurisdiction to control that.
Mm-hmm.
So it could...
The limitation is that they're restricted
in the volume
that they can produce.
Okay.
And it's,
and for us as a zoning commission, we have to think about whether those applications fit our zoning code in this site.
Well, I would say look deeper than the surface. Don't just stop with an analysis of saying that this operation is so different from anything else that it's distasteful to us. Look beyond that and look at the underlying use and the characteristics that use entails, what byproducts there are, what trash and
waste.
Smells and waste
deliveries.
And those are your best.
So if a
basis.
Brewpub decided to advertise this as a regional destination, and encourage buses to come in. That's also, and the bus tours to come in and dine in their facility, that would be allowed too.
I think that the you're going to look at the character of the locality,
yeah,
and say, is this an appropriate place to locate,
oh, yeah,
a restaurant?
Yeah, I'm just trying
because,
to...
Because a restaurant could do the exact same thing that,
yeah,
you're saying.
Right.
They could invite,
right,
people to come in and say, we have unique, right, offerings, and we would like you to plus your folks over to us.
Right.
So ask yourself whether that location is appropriate for a restaurant that might be a very successful and busy place.
Or if it's, all right, I understand. Thank you.
Okay. So the next thing I would like to see is whether there are any outstanding issues that any of my fellow commissioners would like addressed by the applicant at the March 1st meeting. Is there any information that we don't have that we may or may not feel we need to basically move forward on a recommendation?
Okay, if you want to, what VA has for anything that we feel like we might still need to have them provide to us.
I'm looking through my notes. I think that I've got everything that I need to say.
Okay, Don?
I might be missing the point about looking at the application strictly from the point of view of zoning. Bill Mears mentioned that all of the group of activities within the envelope of the building are in compliance. And I'm looking at the logic of how do you get material in and out of the brew pub without using public sidewalks or highways. And, you know, they blocked out on this delivery trash schematic a delivery and garbage removal zone that totally blocks the six parking places that are shown on the schematic. So to me, the plan doesn't work. And I'd like them to explain how to accomplish the brewing operation without imposing on public space.
Well, does that question, if I may, have to be restricted to how they operate their brewing function as opposed to just how they function as a restaurant? How do they function as a restaurant? Younger, same concerns apply, whether they're producing alcohol or not.
Parking places include one place for a van. They don't say whose van that is. And I think that's reasonable. But in my mind, if you start talking about manufacturing 4,000 barrels of beer a year, that's a lot of material that's got to move. A lot more than this restaurant has ever needed in the years that I've been in town.
Well, I would. If that's a concern of yours,
right.
I think that's an appropriate area of inquiry. But not. It's not just a function, though.
It's for the. It's for the. I mean, Fred's point is it's for the whole operation.
Yeah, that's my point also.
Fine.
I mean, they've got to get food in and out of there too, and they have to get materials and. And whatever, I'm not an expert on restaurants, you'll know more about it than I do, but I think that's an appropriate area for you to inquire about. I think that the applicant may say, we have no intention of producing 4,000 barrels a year or anything close to that at this location, but that would not necessarily invite you to restrict them either.
But they would be allowed to under the regulations.
They would be allowed to. And therefore, you're allowed to consider whether they can operate as a restaurant slash brewery pub in that location.
Okay. So one issue that we might ask is for them to explain their materials delivery, and I would add trash removal, waste removal mm-hmm. plan without using public space.
Yeah.
Or if it requires public space.
We don't have that as of now.
Well, we have a block.
The way we're saying public, what does that mean by public space? Because if you really look around town, what happens now is everybody delivers on public space. So how are we going to address this differently than anybody else?
I think the first thing we've got to put on the table is let's talk about what's there now for a couple seconds. Okay?
Okay.
There is an existing restaurant there and residential use on the first floor, which is non-conforming, according to the zoning. It's supposed to be all commercial. So we have a non-conforming building. It's a legal non-conforming, I understand. And also part of that building was a... I'm just describing the building as I know it, and I actually talked to the seller one time thinking about buying myself, and this is what he told me. And in that building was a little coffee shop that's been closed for 1 year, maybe 2 years, I don't know, at least 1 year, where they would just sell coffee and take out donuts and things like that. And directly behind it, according to the seller, he was telling me there was a residential mm-hmm. part of the building.
Yeah.
So we have a restaurant that did not sell beer or anything before. Did not manufacture beer. It sold, primarily breakfasts and late dinners and things like that. And we had a closed down coffee shop, and then a major portion. I'm seeing just according to this plan, I'm saying major. A major portion of this building was used as seasonal residential because he told me he couldn't live there in the winter, and I'm basing my statement on that because we've asked for plans that haven't been submitted, so I can only go on what I know. So that's the building that's there now. We all agree to that, right?
Now
what they're proposing, one more thing. It's also, according, if you were to understand or take for granted some of the things that are on the plans that they sent to us that aren't signed and sealed, it also violates the front yard setback on Route 1.
Which is an existing non-conforming structure.
But, that's the characteristics of it. And also, it is in violation of the, not violation, but doesn't conform to the floodplain management height of the building, which is to be, and including with the town's freeboard, has to be 3 feet above the outside grade.
Right.
And it
well,
is.
Yeah.
It's at street level. So that's pretty much the existing thing. And now, there's also parking on the side of it, which I guess was used by... I don't know, maybe the building, the residents who lived there and the customers of the building. So that's pretty much the use of it.
Right.
And now they want to transform it into a year-round restaurant that manufactures beer, sells beer off-site, and can sell it wholesale, which would mean bringing in delivery trucks to deliver materials and to pick up materials that weren't there before.
You need to qualify that a little bit. Have deliveries.
I heard Mike say that deliveries of things that they did not have.
They never delivered grain before.
No, but they deliver food. So, I mean, well, it's a restaurant.
I understand that.
Go ahead, Mike.
Okay. And also, if you were to interpret the drawings to be accurate, there seems to be an adverse use of the building onto the adjoiners to the north, which could, complicate things if a boundary line dispute became an issue or easements became an issue. And I don't see, I haven't been given an easement that, if in fact that's the case, but I don't have a professional drawing to verify it, I just don't want to see, which could complicate things if we were to continue looking at what they want to do here on the side of that building. So, and these are things that I observe from it. Now, as far as what you said, Jim, about the, it's always going on in town like that, without a doubt, that whole front part of Route 1 is no parking. It's a bicycle lane. There's signs that are saying no parking, no stopping and standing. The curb is painted yellow. There's big bicycle signs there. In fact, I just came up from Bethany, and that lane runs from Bethany right on through Dewey as a designated, along Route 1, over the bridge and everything, as a bicycle to be used for bicycles, no stopping and standing. So we can't
I don't think we can, as a planning commission, say that it's going to be okay for them to park on Route 1 and make their deliveries because everybody else is doing it. You know, we got to recognize that it's a no parking zone. It's got all the signs of no parking.
I don't think anyone's going to dispute that. I did check with the police just to see how it's done practically throughout town. And short stops, they're not going to enforce it. They feel that it's, you know, part of doing business in the town, unless the town aggressively wants to stop all parking.
But I mean, to some extent, I believe that this is a non-issue because the applicant has proposed deliveries and trash pickup in their parking lot. Whether that's okay or not is a different issue, but not to use the Route 1 frontage. And I think we can clearly stipulate that as a condition, and Fred is shaking his head saying, yes, absolutely, that they can't have that for buses or delivery trucks or whatever, and that's enforceable, and
that narrows down quite a bit the area of this property that they can use for customer parking, delivery of products, removal of waste, buses stopping, and allowing for the safe flow of traffic in that intersection.
Well,
narrows it down pretty good.
You know,
it's that one area there that they've highlighted.
If you're under 2,000 square feet, there's no requirement for parking. None. That's existing.
Oh, I understand that. Yeah. But the area that they designated for delivery that they drew on their sketch is an area
where the parking
near that intersection. First of all, would block the parking. If somebody was there, they couldn't park their delivery truck there. They'd have to park out on the street,
or they wouldn't park at all.
Well, then where are they going to park?
No, his point is that if a car was parked in the parking space, they can't use that space.
And then if they do park out in the parkway or the street,
well,
I mean, logic is going to tell you if one or two cars are coming from the beach and they want to go out on Route 1 and cars are turning into Route 1, I mean, from Route 1 onto the property, onto Salisbury Street.
So this whole parking issue is, I think we all agree that on March 1st, we, as part of the applicant's presentation, we would like them to address their parking plan.
Well, delivery plan more than that.
Well, their delivery plan.
Well, their bus stops. I've been to functions where if a bus comes in, they park, everybody gets out pretty quick, they go in, and then when it's time to leave, usually the bus gets there about anywhere from 10 minutes to a half an hour early and sits outside and runs the air conditioner so everybody are...
Mike, excuse me. To be fair to Clint Bunting, in our last meeting, he said that tour buses would be parked out of town.
Where are they going to drop the passengers off and pick them up?
Fine. This is not a question that we're going to answer today.
Well, this is a workshop. We got
right, and I understand that this is an issue that several members of the commission would want addressed. And so we will ask them, the applicant, to
pick the people up.
Right. Fine. So are there other...
So, yeah, I have a question for the town. So let's
sure.
Can you move your microphones? Because you're not getting picked up as well as... Thanks.
Oh, I have a question, Fred. And it deals with what is reasonable for us as a planning commission to deal with deliveries of any commercial product, any commercial business here. Because, and it, as Mike has said, you know, you go throughout various jurisdictions and you can go to Rehoboth, for example, and you see delivery trucks on Rehoboth Avenue because there's no real access to that. And we have a commercial district. The RB2 is a commercial district. So how restrictive could we be on deliveries? I mean, I think the fact that we have an RB2 district and it's commercial, it seems to me the town, when we did the comprehensive plan some time ago, and I don't want to go back to it, but we allowed commercial enterprises to operate here. So how restrictive could we be to prevent somebody from having deliveries and maintain a commercial district?
Well, I can't quantify how restrictive you could be, but I could tell you a court would look at how the town operates now, and you might have to defend that you've applied a standard to this applicant that's not applied to his predecessor and others. So it's not an easily answered question. You could say that you could be concerned that because of certain characteristics of this brewery, pub, restaurant, that it may need to offer more in the way of protection against intrusions of trucks in public right-of-ways, more so than the restaurant that preceded it. But you don't have a lot of flexibility. You don't have much flexibility. You need to apply the same standards that apply throughout town to this applicant.
And this is a new application, so anything following it would have to apply the same standards. So.
Well, you should be looking for guidance from your existing code.
Oh, we have that. No person shall park a vehicle on the public streets in town of Dewey Beach in violation of the official traffic control signs regulated parking.
Do people do that? Does that happen?
And they get fined. But our concern is, planning commission right now, is that the potential of additional deliveries and buses that aren't there now, aren't coming in there now, the only place that they're showing the area is dangerous. That's my concern. It's going to bog up or bottle up that intersection. They have alternatives that they could do to make deliveries, but where they're shoving it now is, I believe, dangerous. And again, I'm just throwing this out for the rest of you to think about.
And I think that's a good synopsis of the question.
Yeah.
Additional deliveries and patrons anticipated from the existing operations, and how are they going to deal with those to not be dangerous? And we will ask them to present their plan to make that effective.
I think you can tell an applicant that you don't like certain aspects of their plotted projected use of the property, that you'd like to see.
Well,
trash cans moved over there.
We're sort of moving into that now with the review of the site plan.
Right. So other issues. Mike, are you? So that was Dawn. Do you have other issues that?
I do.
Right.
Yeah. I do. One of the things that we voted on and requested them to provide to us, and actually, my interpretation of the building code, they're going to have to provide it sooner or later, and I prefer to provide it now, is a floor plan. Well, before I get a floor plan of the existing building signed by a registered architect, accurately delineating the existing residential walls versus the commercial existing and proposed. I know there's a graphic depiction of what's going on here, but I'm used to seeing things that have more certification to it and accuracy, and I don't want to base my decision on what I'm seeing. So what I'm seeing is lines going around the commercial use, and it shows the entrance and exits to that. Again, going back to the possibility of an encroachment on the north side or adverse use on the north side. I've driven by there a number of times now, and there's something on the side, north side of that building that's attached to that building that if I were to rely on the version of the survey that was sent to us, that building is only a little over a foot off of the property line. I don't know if that includes the roof overhang or not. If it doesn't include the roof overhang, then the roof overhangs over the property. But there's an addition on the side of that building Cordell Circuit that is not shown on these drawings. And
so Bill Mears...
didn't you meet with Clint Lane?
Actually, I talked to the owner. Yeah. I told him we'd have to clarify.
Okay.
So I mean, the building official is going to request or require a valid survey.
People already asked for that.
Right, but Bill has a question, and your point is you would like to see that sooner rather than later.
Well, that's one of the things, the concerns that we put in our original request to be given to us, that a professional engineer, surveyor, architect send in certified drawings of the property, the existing building on it, as it is, and the proposed uses, so that we could sit down here and intelligently look at those and base our decisions on that. And there's a number of those components that either are on this plan or shown vaguely on this plan that without a certification from a professional, we got to rely on our own interpretation or the builder's word that is where it is. I'm not easy with that. I'm not happy with that. So we've asked for that in our last meeting, and we haven't been provided it yet.
So is there a consensus amongst the commission members that we would like to see that for the March meeting?
Yes.
I have a question. To do this? Are we required to ask for surveys? Is that a requirement, or is that just something that we would like?
Well, in this case right here, I think it's, we should have it. It's a question of everyone's here, what rights they have around the property. I mean, everybody usually does have a survey of the property when they were doing something to it. No. But I want to add to what Mike is saying. The county, they haven't had any conceptual plans to do anything in this building yet. They've got to go to the county, the fire marshal, the Board of Health, and all those organizations before they can even start building in this town or doing any kind of reconstruction to this building.
We don't issue a permit.
And we do not issue a permit until all those certifications are to the town.
I agree. It's a zoning certification, I think, followed by an issuance of a permit by the county, followed by a building permit.
Well, all the certifications from the Board of Health, the fire marshal, all have to come before you can even get a Sussex County building permit.
I agree. Okay. Thank you. Can I be made to understand somewhat what the concern is on the north side of the building? Are you referring to an adjoining property?
When you join the north side of the building is the Exxon gas station. And if you were to stand where you thought the property line right now is, there's a significant fence. It might be two fences. I know there's a cyclone fence and maybe a...
there's one fence.
It's a white fence. Then there's a bump out of this building. It's not shown on any of these plans. That comes into the area of that fenced-in portion of the property. Okay? So there's something... And then there's a gate. There's actually a gate there that's locked that apparently... people who own this building is using that area to come into that bump out and get into the building. Okay, and into this restaurant building, into where the, I don't know if it's a residential part of the building or the old coffee shop.
So
it's there now.
So are you saying that perhaps they shouldn't be doing that?
Well, that's what's there, and it's obvious. It's a pretty good bump out. It's right enough for a person to open the door and walk in. Mm-hmm. If you were to use the survey that was presented to us to determine where that building is on the property. The building itself is just about a foot off the property line, which would mean that bump out and that area that's being used by these people could be an adverse area. And the bump out is over the property line. So it changed the characteristic enough of this building to be important for us to make a determination.
And I would just ask you, how is that important?
How's that important?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a legal entity in that the restaurant has a lease on part of that block. The Exxon has a lease on part of that block. And the owner of the ground has a line that defines the two contracts. So that if the restaurant is trying to use part of the land that's leased to Exxon, it's not right.
And right, but how does that relate to the Planning Commission's function? I mean, if it turns out that the area that they have designated for the patrons to come in and out of the restaurant is not on their property, that's a huge issue for the applicant.
But that's on the south side.
I think, Fred, I think the issue is we don't know.
But even if you were to receive a survey that was signed, any real estate attorney will tell you that doesn't necessarily end the discussion.
But I think we would be negligent not to look at it and just consider it.
But I would just urge you to be in a position to enunciate why that is important.
And what are we going to do about it if it's shown?
They have a doorway, best I can tell. It looks like they had a doorway on this restaurant building back in the back that opens that way. And if they are close to the property line, that doorway will be on the other property.
Okay, but so what's the problem? That creates a potential issue that the prior owner and the present owner and the future owner might have with respect to the adjacent property owner. But I would urge you to translate that into your relevant list of considerations here. I mean, suppose a court were to determine that they can't use that door. They got to keep it locked. They can't use it because it's not violating a law. It's potentially a civil dispute. And if it doesn't relate to some important function of the restaurant feature or the brewery feature, then I think it becomes just a curiosity. If it's a fire exit, and if it's important for public safety purposes that door be open, and there's some question as to whether or not they'll be able to use it for that purpose, then I think that's a legitimate consideration.
Well, I think for us, it's important for us to know the accuracy of where that building is on the property for a number of reasons.
But I'm asking you why. That's all. And you don't have to tell me now, but I'm telling you when the time comes, I would urge you to be in a position to explain that.
Okay. And I would like them to explain why that bump out is not shown on their drawings, and what are they going to do to that side of that wall, and how are they going to do it within their property line?
From what I'm seeing, Mike, I mean, the doors that they're using on the north side there, they're going to be bringing their brew stuff into this front on the west side, the doors on the west.
Because somewhere in their application, they said that door that's on the side of the building will only be used as an emergency exit.
And they do show, if that bump out is towards the rear of that 8-foot alley, they do show a 0-foot setback there. They don't show it on their drawing, on the apartment drawing, but you don't see it here, but you see it here in this new plan that they submitted. You can see, they say 0-foot setback right here. See what I'm saying, where it circles?
Yeah,
it shows 0-foot setback.
Oh, I agree, it's a 0-foot setback. Right? Yeah. But what we're asking for is an accurate drawing of the existing building in relationship to the property, and we don't have that.
Well, I mean, I'm looking at this plan that was prepared by an engineer, and it does show the property line of the building superimposed. It's not an official survey, but even if it's 8-foot or 0-foot, I don't see how that's going to make a difference in what we're doing. Make our decisions on. I thought we're tasked with coming up with a list of conditions we want to impose on the sites to make sure they don't mess up the area and the neighbors and get the neighbors all upset when they're operating. The building now, they're not going to be able to move the building off of the property line or off the Exxon property. If it's on there, they're not going to pick it up and move it over. So that's not going to be the survey is not going to have any relevance to what I look at. It'd be great to have it, but like I said, I don't need anything else myself.
I'm with Mike on that.
Okay. Well, you're with Mike Harmer.
Harmer on that. It's not going to change my...
Okay.
Yeah, one way or the other, I'm more concerned about the use and everything else.
Signed,
survey is going to make that difference.
Yeah, survey. Exactly.
Okay, Mike Karaskevich, any other issues?
This is what this is. You see where I start with? Well, we talked about, you know, where they're going to store the trash. You know, one of the conditions was, you know, specifically addressing the trash, you know, potential. That's, you know, that's kind of like in a gray area now, again, because these drawings are, in my opinion, incomplete. The grill operation itself, I think is a little, for me, it's, even with the information they've given me, trying to put it all together and see, you know, I just quite can't still understand where things are going to go. I'm lost in the stage where you finally get it down to where it's fermenting, and then you take it out of the fermentation tanks, and then I believe you have to store it, and I'm not a true expert, so sometimes I'm just throwing these questions out. Where are you going to store these kegs? And then I know there's a refrigeration process and then a distribution process to the bar customers. And we've asked for all that in detail. And I, you know, it stops at surface age. And I don't think I have enough information regarding that. And a lot of these things that I'm asking
Let's hang up there, stop there for a minute, because that's an issue that... I have some concerns about too. When we've gone from 2 days brewing twice a week to brewing 5 days a week, the applicant represents that conditioning takes 9 days. It's a process where I guess you put the beer you brewed into a container and you let it sit someplace for 9 days. They're proposing to brew 14 barrels a day, so the math is 150 barrels that they have to provide storage for, and it's not clear to me that that is shown anywhere on the schematic.
Or the refrigeration of it. I see a walk-in. It says walk-in, and I don't know the size of it and what the capacity of it, whether they can store, if that's where they're going to store all of their, you know, final product for distribution into the restaurant or not. I'm just questioning, like you, the area that they're designated to. Also...
So I think that the concern, to some extent, is that they might co-opt part of their residential space for storage or incorporate that into the commercial aspect. And I mean, Fred, you keep saying, why do we need to know this? And I just think we need to know whether or not we're approving a feasible operation as represented by the plans. And it's unclear to me, at least, that this is feasible within the plans as presented. So I'd like to, you know, just have a better feeling. And plans do keep changing as you know, as time goes on, and there are a bunch of circles that have labels in them that I was unable to read and unable to correlate with the steps in their brew process. And I was willing to assume that that would be sufficient area to hold 2 days a week brewing, but it's not clear to me, considering you'd be consuming it as well, but 5 days a week is, I
so
think.
The question would be, is if they're going to be doing 7 days a week, where is all the storage going to take place?
Well, I think...
Annual refrigeration.
Yeah, that's a legitimate question.
And to answer your question about your comment about the accuracy of the plan, in the preliminary site plan requirements, it is there. It's item number 12. You need a certification of plan accuracy by an engineer or a surveyor. It's nothing extra that we're asking for. This is what we want.
No, I was asking Bill, when we do certification, I mean, in your estimation, what is certification of the plan?
Well, the only certification that we've ever really applied is on new, you know, construction. When we've had renovations on buildings and we've never ever required any formal, you know, drawings for a beautification.
So I guess the question I'm asking is, are we requiring these people to do more than what we require anybody else to do if they were doing a renovation?
I have to answer that question.
Don't answer. Well, I just want to be fair, that's all. I mean, if we're, you know,
it's
let's
a rhetorical
be
question.
Yeah. That's where I'm coming from.
The developers, in all cases, has to do due diligence on their projects. And, you know, to bring items to the table that are incomplete and leave us guessing and going back and forth with each other is not our responsibility to cover that. We want to see what's clear.
Okay.
And in my opinion, if it's not signed and sealed by a professional engineer, architect, or surveyor, I can't trust it. I can't. For its accuracy,
well,
for its determination of the codes.
Mike, you may not have trusted anything that's come through here then.
Well, when do we start? When is day one?
You know, unfortunately, this is... So we now have two professional engineers. Don, are you a professional engineer? Okay, so we have two professional engineers now on the Planning Commission, and I don't believe that we have had professional engineers...
No, I understand.
Right, I mean, so
I'm just trying to look at this from the standpoint. If you're doing a renovation,
I mean, Bill said that the building official has said that he needs
something, but he doesn't need the full layout
right.
And a certified copy. That's what he's telling us. Okay, and we're saying something different here now.
And I think I need a layout. I need a layout of the interior. I don't need it certified.
Okay.
Mike's point is that as a professional, he feels that, I believe I'm putting words into your mouth, that we incur liability if we don't require, if we don't act on accurate facts or if we ignore obvious discrepancies.
Yeah, well, I can understand the obvious discrepancies, and you can ask for clarifications, but I'm trying to deal with, you're renovating a building. You're not changing the structure of the building. You're renovating, and you're doing something with it. That, to me, is more important than getting the layout of the exterior building and where the boundaries go. It's an existing building. We know it's been there forever, and I remember, you know, when it was a clothing shop, part of it. And it was I'm familiar with the building. The boundaries have not changed. So
how do you know that?
Unless somebody came in and did it.
I mean, seriously, from a professional point of view, Jim, how do you know the boundaries haven't changed?
Well, I'm making an assumption. As much as you're making the assumption that something may have changed.
You have to, without the facts.
Well, I disagree with you. Just my opinion.
All right. So one of I know Marty cites, I mean, getting back to the list of issues, I mean, Marty was concerned about how they were going to heat the boil kettles. And I mean, we know that Dogfish Head has large propane tanks out in the parking lot, which I assume are to heat the brewery because they seem larger than might be needed to just heat the restaurant. Are we, you know, is the applicant going to need, maybe they're doing heating electrically, in which case all they need is an electrical heavy up, and that's not part of our concern. If they're going to put a 5,000-gallon storage tank, propane tank, in the space between their residences and the residential property next door, I think that's a zoning concern. And I know that was a concern that Marty had.
Could we?
That seems like that would be a reasonable...
It seems to me
we asked for that, too.
And we asked for that information, and we were not provided with any...
Right. We weren't provided with that.
And so, you know, Jim might say, well, they have not shown a propane tank any place, whether it's an interior or an exterior storage, and... So we might assume that they're not going to...
You can make the assumption, and I would say if it's not on this plan that they've given us, and they can't put anything out outside. We could do a limitation. We can accept the plan the way it is and say, you can't put storage here, you can't put over there. It has to be within the confines of the building. You could do that.
Put a propane tank inside the building?
What, or buried or whatever, but you can't do it within
I guess they could bury it.
We can make restrictions.
But then it would be buried in their required yard, and I don't know if they can. Can you do that, Bill?
Well, that's what I'm saying. The fire marshal.
Actually, you can't.
And actually, the people that are going to install the gas tanks, you know, they have regulations.
It's in a floodplain.
Huh?
It's in a floodplain, so they can't bury it.
Right. I mean, they can't. They have to have regulations. Each one of them have regulations to where all these tanks or whatever are going to be. Where close to a residential area, or with the, you know, a public area. I mean, there's restrictions. There's the ones it's going to have to meet.
Right.
I mean, and the zoning commission is going to say you have to meet all you know, restrictions of fire marshal, building codes, and board of health, and the story.
I agree.
The building codes are also going to look at what's going on inside,
right,
and make an assessment as to how costly and how extensive the safety measures are going to be. So if they're storing large quantities of alcohol on site, more than a certain amount, I believe it's 130 gallons, I'm not sure, it's not my territory, but the more they're storing there, the higher the alcohol by volume. Our alcohol percentages by volume, the more restricted they're going to be, the more costly it's going to be to renovate this building and to get it up and running. So those are major considerations that they'll have to address.
So, Fred, should we... So you said 150 gallons triggers... Well, my quick calculation is that they're going to be storing 4,000 to 5,000 gallons.
Well, then that.
So is that an issue that is that an issue for us as the zoning, as the Dewey Beach Zoning Commission, or is that not an issue for us?
Well, it's an issue for the applicant.
Absolutely. It's okay. An issue for the applicant and the building and the Sussex County.
If the applicant, you can ask the applicant to designate the different areas within their facility and how they're going to be occupied, what tanks and other facilities are going to be located under the roof and where they're going to be, and you can condition your approval upon them constructing in accordance with, substantially in accordance with those representations. So if you approve the plan, then they are not free to deviate substantially from that. They can't.
So could you say the first half of that sentence again?
The recommendation is conditioned upon the make a positive recommendation conditioned upon the site plan representation.
That's
correct.
Right. But yeah. we can ask them to show us the locations of, you said a couple of things.
Facilities, you know, whatever's under roof.
Oh, we've done that. I mean, seriously, that's what we asked for at the last meeting. We wanted a detailed plan of the existing structure and the proposed structure.
Okay, so we can ask for that again.
Were you given a reason why that was an objectionable request?
I don't believe so.
A reason, no. I don't think we were given a reason. I'm not here somewhere.
I think it was just not addressed.
Okay, well,
and in fact, to take the applicant's side for a minute, they did come back with modifications to their drawing that showed, as I said, a bunch of circles and rectangles that mm-hmm. had changed since the previous one, which presumably correspond to the various steps of the process. Although, since I'm not an expert, I couldn't make the walkthrough. Bill?
I thought that they bring a drawing in that they think is going to be approved by all of the outside inspections agencies, and it's turned down by one of them. Are you going to force them to come back and have it approved again? That's what I'm saying. Those enforcement agencies will be the ones that determine the location of all this stuff that's been suitable, safe, and everything else.
I also think they're going to be, excuse me, I'm sorry, that there are going to be changes. I mean, as they go through the process that was just referenced by Mr. Mears, it's my understanding from an engineer, it's very seldom for a project like this that they nail it the first time, that somebody's going to find fault with something in the approval process and say, you need to relocate this to comply with some code provision that is of great interest to them. And that will happen. So some amount of deviation from the representations made today is to be expected.
So, Fred, could we ask them to provide us and walk us through at the next meeting their best guess, essentially what they would be submitting to all of these regulatory authorities for us to determine whether that operation within this structure is consistent with our understanding of a restaurant?
Well, you first are going to have to be able to defend the answer to the question is necessary for your purposes, right? And for your appropriate purposes, whatever they are. I mean, it's not up to you to decide whether a storage facility can be greater than a certain number of gallons.
Absolutely.
Or located within the range of a front door. Secondly, in this day and age, there's so much more regulation than there once was that it wouldn't be economical for somebody to say they want to construct a facility and pay an engineer to issue final plans before they got a zoning approval, because those final plans don't cost $100. You know, they're quite costly. And you generally don't start with plans that are final plans. You start with a concept plan. And
so could we ask for a concept plan?
That's what was submitted to us.
I think everything we have
that's
here
is a concept
plan.
Conceptual plan. I mean, I guess concept plan is a term of art. It's still not clear to me how all of this stuff is going to, storage and refrigeration and heating and brewing and venting and kegging, the kegging line and all of that stuff is that going to encroach on the areas that are part of the restaurant?
Well, we're getting pretty close to this issue of, regulating in an area where we don't have any jurisdiction. If your concern is that they have to designate an area for their restaurant, and they can't encroach upon that, then that's a reasonable basis for asking the question. If you're asking the question because you think that if they store more alcohol there than a certain amount that it's dangerous to the public, well, that's an issue for other authorities, I think. You can't substitute your judgment for the commissioners and for the counties and your building official when it comes to actually locating these and constructing these facilities. You can't tell them they have to use brass as opposed to steel or something like that. There's not a zoning issue.
Right. I mean, I guess my concern is since I can't tell from the plans, they've got this nice layout of different dining sections, which, I always like because some tend to be noisier than others. And But what if the counters and things that they show in the northern part, in the bar tasting area, what if they have to co-opt all of that with storage stuff so, you know, it's not a 110-seat restaurant, it winds up being a 60-seat restaurant or something, and that's...
I think that's an example of a problem. They have a problem. If they're granted a conditional use permit to operate a 110-seat restaurant and they've only got 50 seats, then they're operating in violation of their permit, and I believe that triggers your authorities.
But right, then again, also, this is a dual, you know, mixed use, and you're concerned about some of the stuff that you're talking about. Suppose that they take away one of the residential units and have to use that for storage or something. They're lessening their nonconformity even more by lessening the residential space that's nonconforming.
Well, if they came back and said that's what they were going to do, that would be fine.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, this could happen when they find out when the conceptual plans come, and then they go for final plans. This could happen, you know.
And that could also add to substantial improvement of the building.
Well, that's what I'm saying. We're all, you know, going on assumptions.
Yeah, what I'm getting at by looking ahead of all these things is the bottom line of substantial improvement to the building. And if we're not seeing it all now, I don't want to bypass that. I want them to know that there's
that's
a possibility.
That's a condition you put in there, that you don't expand past the present area that you, you know, that this, you know, is going to be built in.
That's what I was thinking too. We would do is approve exactly the plan that they've given the perimeter.
Right. Right.
Anything else is not approved.
That's right.
And, well, I mean, when you which we would put the burden recommend back approval to.
Right.
Yeah.
Based on certain conditions.
Right.
Well, and Mike's point is we don't know where the current boundary is between the commercial and the residential.
There's nothing there. There's nothing pointing to that line saying residential, commercial. I mean, simple as that. Well, somebody's certifying to it.
No, I hear what you're saying, but on the plan, they're not including residential here.
Right.
Right?
Well, they're showing it in the site plan here. They're showing
Mike Paraskevich's point is that we don't know where the current line is. We just know that the proposed line is.
So you've asked for a survey. Mr. Mayor says we're going to get a survey, so we'll have the survey. So what else do we need? What else are we looking for?
Well, the question is, do we need the survey before March 1st?
Do we want to tell the applicant when they come in next week that they're going to go through their operation, you know, what they're going to do in these particular round circles on the drawing and show us, you know, sort of tell us what they're planning on doing. I mean, that or just have our authority to ask them to show us, you know.
No,
give us a run through on how you're going to load up your materials and all that.
That's going to end up at the bar to be delivered.
Right.
Yeah, that's one of the things we've asked for.
Yeah,
we've asked about it originally.
Okay. So
we asked for the survey plan originally.
Right. Okay. So we're going to get a survey. You're going to ask for a survey. Is that what I'm hearing? Is it?
Well, I mean, I've already went that through that with him, and he come with this drawing here. So what everybody here is, it's determined, it's inside that building what he's doing, and the outside use that you're concerned with, I understand. Maybe they can explain it. It might be part of the gas station's use. We don't know.
That's right. We don't know.
So,
but I'd like
but to inside know. That building is what they are applying for, not outside that building.
Part of Mike Paraskevich's, and I'll come to his defense on this part, although I hadn't appreciated this. This site plan shows delineations between a space proposed to be used commercially and a space proposed to be used residentially. We don't know, and Mr. Townsend might say it's not our purview, we don't know if that represents the current demarcation or not. Well, you know, there's been no representation that one way or the other, and we don't know, and I don't know whether it's important for deliberations or not.
Well, look to your code, ask yourself, where might this plan fail to meet your code requirements? And if you can't find some guidance in the code to justify your area of inquiry, then maybe inquiring about things that aren't valid considerations.
Well, if I were to get to the chapter quickly of conditional uses, which I think this meeting was generated upon, conditional use, in the paragraph there it says we have the authority to ask basically whatever we want.
Well, but Fred's point is...
But the limitation is within reason. So the court's going to review. I mean, if you tell them that they can't produce, I mean, I don't want to be silly, but whatever conditions you seek to apply need to be generated by an effort to promote the public policies expressed in your zoning code.
I think we have to test their statements because they've made statements about certain things, non-expansion, expansion of the building, areas to be used, you know, that were used primarily as other uses and so forth. And residents have voiced concerns about these items as well. And in order to respond to their statements and the public's questions, this is information we need.
Well, it's not enough to say that the public is asking. I mean, you're here, you've been appointed to exercise your judgment for good reason, because you have experience and you're devoted to the town's well-being. And you don't have to ask questions that the public is asking if you don't think those questions are appropriate questions. You need to do your best job on this, irrespective of the number of emails you've received in opposition to this.
David, in the ordinance, one of the things we talked about was that what they've represented here is what they're going to actually do. So we put some wording in the ordinance. You know, that would help. That, you know, when and if a recommendation is made, that it's made in concert with our expectation that the operation as shown in the diagram will be adhered to in general. Or what's your legal word you have?
Substantially, I think that's...
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
One question I have for Bill Mears is, I understand Mike's concern, you know, about should this plan be submitted with this or should this plan be submitted with that? A survey submitted with, you know, just a renovation less than 50% when there's no outside ongoing work, et cetera, et cetera. Do we have a list for, does the Town of Dewey Beach Town Hall Building Officials Office have a list that says, if you're just doing a renovation, do you have a list of stuff that has to be submitted?
Not on renovations, only on new construction.
Yeah, so Mike, that might be a solution to one of your concerns, which I have the same concern. That, you know, if I'm an applicant, as a Town of Dewey Beach, how do I assure that you, the applicant, know exactly what you should submit? Where's that checklist? And we don't have it for the renovations. So there's a little bit of gray areas that I see created, you know, for the applicant, which we can correct. You know, I don't know, you know, with Bill, who has the authority in town to start working on like a checklist. So if it's us, we can start working on that. You know, not going to do it tomorrow, but I'm the way, you know, the way I see a transparent process is that if I'm the authority, I'm the municipality, I'm going to tell all applicants exactly what's needed for their application and not make it up as we go. So maybe, you know, part of this discussion of should we get a survey or not, you know, that's precipitated from the fact that there is not that list. So we can work to better that as we go forward. You know, if I can be done tomorrow, those lists take a while to get general consensus on what's reasonable, what we should ask for, you know, not ask for. But in the end, we would actually be improving our process, helping Bill to improve the process if we begin to look at that you know, what are the requirements going to be? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
But for now, we're not in that perfect position of being able to tell the applicants this applicant or that applicant exactly what we want.
The town does have, and it's there for the public, and it's the due diligence of the applicant to go through what the town does have. They don't have a checklist. They got to go through the other things. They have all these ordinances that covers floodplain management, building construction, and definitions are in there. And you know, making up words are one thing, but you can refer specifically to what's on record. You know, under floodplain management, minor repair versus substantial improvement. It's a pretty clear definition between what the two are. And you know, it's the due diligence of the applicant to see where he falls in there. And that's how it is. And in lieu of a checklist, they do have things to work with, because I spent the last week going through them and making these points what I think would be a concern of mine if I was even the applicant.
So I sense that there are basically two points that we're going to go to the applicant for. One has to do with their plan for deliveries and trash removal, which they will present to us, and tours, if they're going to run tours in terms of dealing with people, which are related to changes of the scope and scale of the current.
And at that point, can I just add something? Because they did submit with their application referral to the Iron Hill Brewery about how it is a contribution to the community that's in. And concerning delivery and trash removal, I Googled 5 Iron Hill Brewery sites, including the one in Westchester. This is just for our information to think about. And each one of these Iron Hill sites have a off-street service area or delivery area that they bring their products in and out of, not blocking public streets. The one in Westchester they refer to has an alley, a service alley in the back that's for general use, and then they have their own little driveway way in the rear of the property. So in comparison to the Iron Hill Breweries, in all fairness, the Iron Hill Breweries, no matter where they're located, have off-streets, well, most of them are located in like a commercial shopping center where it's private property and it's not jurisdiction. And they have off-street delivery areas. It's not like this property here. Iron Hill has sufficient delivery service. Even the Dogfish Head has their parking lot that they bring all of their deliveries into.
And to some extent they're proposing to use their, which Dogfish uses when they're not open as a restaurant, presumably.
Right.
And their plan may be to use their parking lot when they're not open as a restaurant for intake and trash removal and all of that. We just need them to talk to us about this.
Yeah.
Because if that's their plan, it seems to me that's a fine plan. So that's one thing. And the second issue is to ask them to run us through their brew process from grain in the door to kegs out the door, whatever, just so that we understand how this all fits into a restaurant, because this is new for us.
And also,
we're okay with that?
Yeah, but also along those lines, we had asked for qualifications of their, I guess the word is brewmaster. That is I believe that falls into almost a science and a safety issue, that we have to know that this person is qualified to run that operation.
And Fred's shaking his head that that's not a zoning issue.
Yeah, how would we know that they were qualified? I mean, who do we have who can confirm their qualifications are the appropriate qualifications?
So in other words, we can just let them open up a brewery and have two guys come off the street and run it. That's all we can do. We don't have any other.
I think, Fred, let me rephrase Mike's question. Can we, as a condition, require that the brewery operation be under the authority controlled, run by whatever the U.S. Brewery Association certification is? You're saying no.
I don't think so, because it's the state's jurisdiction to regulate the manufacture and sale of alcohol, and not ours. If you could develop a record that says that this use is a potential threat to the health, safety, and welfare of the surrounding community, then I think you're very well able to rely on that in making your recommendation. But you have to produce the record in order to withstand the challenge.
So if I were to think about the potential problems of a brewery, I'd have to realize that the town has no authority to say who runs that brewing operation.
It's a state licensed operation.
Okay, that answers my question. Okay. So the town has to realize that they can bring in whoever they want to run that brewery operation.
Well, the town should recognize that it's the state's jurisdiction to regulate that operation. And that may be more or less satisfying to some people than others.
Would that hold true for a regular restaurant, for a kitchen area,
sure,
and cooks?
It's
the same thing. We don't regulate that.
Mm-hmm. No.
So we would have to rely on others to regulate it.
Well, to me, there's a pretty major difference between cooking and brewing 4,000 gallons of alcohol. I'm just building up my own feeling for you, what we can do, what we can't do.
Okay, so I'd like to turn to, I think we're done with this. I'd like to turn to the draft ordinance for 5 or 10 minutes, because
I had a couple questions.
Well, I'd like to go through it from the front, and as issues arise or we need to discuss things, to have people chime. So there's a bunch of whereas clauses, but the third one...
David, if I can interrupt for a second, I failed to bring mine with me. Is there another copy that could be answered?
Okay.
This is the latest one. It's dated February 14th.
Correct.
The one we already ordered
correct
off of.
Yeah.
Is that it?
That's attachment 4.
Which one is that, David? When I opened it up, it's one of these. Which one?
Well,
Jack Forrest Amendment. Is it this one?
I guess. Probably not. I mean, that's a good place. Okay. So the third whereas clause basically does two things. It says that the commissioners find the inclusion of a small brewery pub as part of the operation of a restaurant to be okay. And then says provided as an accessory use, and then defining accessory use is that the brewery area should be less than 25% of the gross square footage, as some attempt to say, is it a major use or an accessory use? 25%, I don't know if that's if that's the right number, or it seemed to me that sounded like it's not 100%, it's not 50%, it's this number is also larger than what it appears that the applicant is going to use, so I didn't feel that that would be a burden to them to meet this. But I think we, at some point need to get a feeling, since anybody who comes through in the future is going to have the same, for a brewery pub as a restaurant, is going to have the basically the same conditions. But then it goes on to say, and limit the off-site sales to 25% of the production, and that's something that, unless the applicant volunteers to, we can't require.
So you're scratching that out. Production limitation.
I don't know if we need to scratch it out, but we need to recognize the fact that the applicant Well, the applicant has not made any representation at this point that they would adhere to that, so I think we would be scratching that out.
We have no jurisdiction.
Because we have no jurisdiction over that. And then, so we get into the sections, and the first is that the commissioners, upon review of the application and our report and recommendation, find this is suitable for the health, safety, welfare of the town. Section 2 is that they grant conditional use approval. Section 3 is that the approval is conditioned on some conditions. The first one is that the primary use is that of a restaurant, and the subsequent language there is the state code definition of a restaurant. And the next one is that their operations are consistent with what they presented to us in their application. Then seated dining for 35. I mean, these are issues straight out of town code for restaurants. A minimum 80% patron area for permanent dining. A maximum of 20% patron area for the bar. These are standard in our code. And
David, excuse me, where are you on this?
I'm on page 3 under section 3, number 5. Designated area for seated food service, no stand-up consumption of alcohol in the designated seated area, all tables and chairs maintained in the configuration approved. Occupancy shall not exceed the fire marshal's occupancy, and I talked to Fred some about this, and there is a question of, you know, we don't enforce fire marshal occupancy. The fire marshal enforces fire marshal occupancy, but we could put a number of 110 in here, which is what the applicant has requested, and say that the patron occupancy shall not exceed 110, and that would be something that the town could enforce.
So, in fact, it may be the case that we can actually enforce the fire marshals.
We had a meeting with the fire marshal earlier this week, and he wasn't sure about that either.
So it's an open.
But he did say that he thought if the town prepared an ordinance to that effect, and he was going to research that as well, that it might be enforceable.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But if, you know, the applicant has said 110, we can put 110, provided the fire marshal's occupancy isn't less. And that would be something that the town could then enforce. Mm-hmm. And I think this is an approach that the town will take in the future in these kinds of ordinances.
Is it less satisfactory to you to say that their conditional use permit is conditioned upon them observing the fire marshal's occupancy?
If you're happy with that, I'm happy with that.
That's what it says in the document, right? I mean, pretty much you're saying that occupancy shall not exceed the occupancy limit determined by the fire marshal's office.
Mm-hmm. So he determines they can have more.
I'm sorry?
So he determines they can have more than 110.
Well,
okay,
then,
but that's his determination.
Then that's his determination, then they could have more.
The state determined what's the safe number of occupants.
And we would have to go by that number.
Yeah.
So if he says they're going to have 120, then they would allow me to have 120.
Yes.
And we couldn't do a conditional use to have 110.
Well, I guess we would be at, you know, what do we do to people who wish to operate restaurants and businesses in town? We require them to abide by the occupancy standards that are deemed appropriate by the appropriate.
Number 9.
That's all I want to clarify what we can do.
Page 3.
I wouldn't encourage you to be more restrictive than the fire.
So the fire marshal says
whatever, then it's
whatever. Number, we're going to have to live with that. So we can't think, we don't necessarily know if this will be 110 patron restaurant.
Well, it's occupancy, so that would apply to, I mean, they may have seating for 110, but they've got servers and food prep people and hosts and hostesses and managers, and so the occupancy should be higher than the seating.
Can we control the seating number?
Don't we do that, Bill? Don't we say that you have to have a certain number?
No, 35 or more for a restaurant. With a, I mean, that's the, for eateries and restaurants.
You know, Mike, I think we can. I think we can, based upon the seating plan they give us. Yeah. They, if we can approve their seating plan, whatever it is, and make it conditional to the seating plan that they've given us.
But they can have people standing up in the bar area.
Yes, they can.
Which then you have a trench.
But you've got to have a designated area specifically for that area, and usually there's some sort of a structure or.
But I mean, they could have seats for 110 in a bar area that fit another 10 people standing up and drinking, and so.
Right.
So I mean, it sounds like we're better to go with a fire marshal occupancy than the 110, and if it's less, it's less, and if it's more, it's not going to be much more.
So then we're not, when this goes out to the public to look at it and understand, we would not be accurate in saying that it's only going to be 110 because it could be more. It
could be more.
So why would we put it on, I mean... See what I'm saying? I mean, I want to be clear what we can do. That's all.
And that's what we are on the same page.
Right. And I want to make sure that when the public sees this, we're not misleading them that, oh, this is okay because we're going to have 110, but we might have 125.
They can be made to any applicant can be made to designate the area set aside for seating. And that area can be enforced against them. So now, if they say this seating area will accommodate 14 tables, and you go in there one night and see they have 15 tables in that area, I don't think that's going to be sufficient cause to close them.
Okay.
No, but we went through this with grottos. With a deck. They had to develop a seating plan. We agreed to it, and that's the way it was.
Right.
No more, no less. They accepted it.
Well, I mean, I think largely that's the case.
Yeah.
I mean, if they've got one more person in there than you think should be able to sit around a table, I think maybe they get a letter, but it's not that you can close them down for minor deviations from what was approved. So you can tell them that they can have a floor plan designating the different areas of the restaurant, and they have to essentially abide by it.
Okay. So number 10 is kitchen facilities under the direction of a cook.
We're going on number 9. We're taking 110 out.
I think we've gone to conditioning this upon their.
Well, even 9 as is what I'm hearing.
Well, no, it's compliance with the it's condition approved. Continued.
My number 9 doesn't say anything about 110.
No,
it doesn't.
It says fire marshal occupancy, yeah. and so it'll be conditioned upon not exceeding the fire marshal's occupancy. And 12, no service area permitted in the entrance or waiting areas. No alcohol service. In the entrance or waiting areas, no outdoor public address system, windows and doors, exterior windows and doors closed at 11 p.m. I mean, they're going to close at 11 p.m., so, you know, that ought to be fine. All interior speakers, pointed interior, these are all conditions that were in the grotto deck expansion.
On the closure issue, Mr. King?
Yeah.
I think you need to explore what is meant by that. That's all. I mean, is it lights out? Everybody's gone at 11. I don't think that's what is meant. Does it mean we're not going to serve any more alcohol after 11? But you can finish your meal. We're not taking anybody new in. So that's just an area that I would urge you to maybe refine.
Okay.
I'm still tripped up on that. I'm sorry.
So number 14 is just that windows and doors have to be closed, which is a standard for all restaurants in town.
Okay, windows and
even doors. Ones that stay open until 1 p.m., they just have to close the windows and doors to contain the noise. That's
okay, so now, so I understand, if I get asked,
this operation can stay open as long as any other town operation serves alcohol till 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock.
Unless they agree to close at
11, and okay. They have agreed to close at 11.
Okay.
And with the Grotto's deck expansion, they basically, I mean, I can look at the
I know exactly what that is.
Language again, but I mean, they said that they would basically, patrons are asked to leave at 11 o'clock.
Okay, do you have any thoughts on how you're going to change number 14 before we read it?
I'm not going to change it at all. This is just windows and doors being closed at 11. So, not law.
18
not
is where you want law.
18 is the issue about.
Let's look at how we want 18 to read. We want to define what, you know, they're not going to see patrons at 10:45, but, you know, 11 o'clock, they're not throwing everybody on the street. So we're going to have to, you know, it's being recommended that we define what 11 o'clock means for real. You know, people are going to be allowed to finish their meals after 11 o'clock. My assumption has been that they would be. So
after 11?
I mean, there's no way if they're saying that last call shall be no later than 10:45 and people would not be seated
after 10:30.
After 10:30, there's no way you're going to get somebody out of a fine meal at 11 o'clock. It's not going to happen unless we need to define it. I think we should say that after 11, people can finish their meals and leave after a reasonable period, something like that.
Well, I didn't realize that. I didn't realize there was as much clarity as there is here at 18, because there's a reference to this on the previous page, and it just says they're hours of operation.
Well, that was just shuttering, closing the doors and the windows to keep the noise inside.
Yeah, that's just doors and windows. That doesn't have to be closed.
I'm looking at it here. I see closed at 11. My mistake. Okay. But this is better than what I had imagined that you had. All right.
You know, maybe if
I mean, we can look at, I mean, Que Pasa is closed at 11, and so the question is, what does, you know, we can look to see what...
Grotto's closes, I think when we did it, it was at 10:30, they would not...
I thought it was 10:15 or something, maybe it was 10:30.
They stopped all service.
Okay.
Well, are we still on 18?
Yeah.
Do you want to think about changing 18?
No.
So, in other words, they can sit around until... 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock.
They can't drink.
No.
I mean, they can finish the drink that they were poured before 10.
Right.
10:40. Yeah. 10:40.
So they could order a couple pitchers of beer and sit around and drink it until whatever time.
Okay. No, the ABCC is pretty well. It depends. If they accept it. I know what the ABCC rules are. It's one drink. That's it.
I will see if I can get a better definition of what closed means.
I just
in terms of other restaurants and what does closed mean at 1 o'clock?
Right. I don't want Bill to get all these calls saying, "Hey, there are people here at 11 o'clock," and I thought that you told them it can't be open after 11 o'clock. That's all.
And I got to tell you, a lot of the residents right now are under that impression.
Right.
So the question is, what does it mean when a normal restaurant is closed at...
At one.
I think it means people are out.
No, because usually at 1 o'clock, not that I'm out at 1 o'clock anymore, but at 1 o'clock, you're finishing up your drinks and you turn the lights on, they're trying to get you out, but it's never 1 o'clock, everybody's out. So if you can come up with a definition of what 11 o'clock means, you know, that'd be great. I'm thinking that 11 o'clock, you know, they're not serving any more food.
Lights on,
10:30.
Lights on, music off.
Well, and we're encouraging you to get out, but it's not going to be 11 o'clock. That place is empty. It's going to be probably 11 o'clock.
So, Bill, how does this work at 1 a.m. for?
Well, they're supposed to be going by 2 a.m. is the law here. 1 a.m. is served. And last call, usually they'll give it noon at midnight.
Last call, they come around 2 or 1.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just saying, you know.
You know.
So maybe.
The ABCC has some strict rules on that, and I know only because I attended a hearing in one of our restaurants was in violation of the rules. Mm-hmm. And an ABCC guy went by, and it was at 2 o'clock, saw people in there and cited the facility for violations. They can't be in there. They've got to shut it down. They've got to separate the serving the alcohol.
Okay, so I propose not to change this, and we will ask the applicant at our next meeting what, I mean, since this is their voluntary.
Yeah.
We will ask them, what do you mean by closed at 11 o'clock?
My understanding, I think that's what the applicant suggested, they're not going to be at bar after 11 o'clock certain drinks.
Right. Okay.
Right. Absolutely.
But if you get seated at 10:30, you're not expected to have your meal and be out of there by 11.
No.
Well, in an earlier draft at 10:30 is an earlier time, and the applicant said that half an hour was enough, but fine. Okay, 19, no live entertainment, unless approved by the town under a special event permit or something. And maybe we should downgrade that to no amplified live entertainment. So if they want to have somebody playing acoustic guitar or something, they don't need to get a special event permit for. I sense nobody's got a problem with that.
What was go over that again? What were you saying?
No amplified. To qualify, no live.
No live entertainment or amplified music?
Just to change it to no amplified live entertainment. So that they could have an acoustic guitar player kind of providing some background. And,
yeah, that works.
No outdoor service areas unless approved under a special event permit or subsequently under conditional use.
They're required to do that anyway.
Well, so, I mean, this, you know.
Along those lines, so my question is to planners, if they do include an outside service area, does that increase their patron area?
Yes.
Okay. And then if it does, then they have to comply with the parking. If it goes over.
If it goes over 2,000.
Okay, that's what I want.
Yeah. The applicant shall so the next two are about parking, and currently there is no parking requirement, as I understand it, for this property. So it's asking that they provide a minimum of one handicap space on the property. It seems to me if they want to be successful, they ought to do that. The second is that is asking them to become conforming with parking for the residential use. And, I mean, I realize that I added this in, but my thinking is that we might be better off to not require spaces dedicated for residential, but to either require or provide them the opportunity to have spaces for the restaurant patrons, because they are in the north end of the commercial district and there's not a lot of metered parking on the street, and it might be good for the town and good for them to use that space for commercial parking.
I don't recall back, you know, a few minutes ago what we decided to recommend for delivery.
They were going to give us a plan. I mean,
did we suggest that they use their parking spaces for that plan?
Their plan currently shows their part of their parking spaces as a delivery trash pickup area.
I guess I'm just having a little question in my mind how we're going to ask them to utilize their parking spaces for delivery and then
ask them
all these conditions.
So we can just delete 22. I mean, I still think it's good for them to provide handicap parking. Maybe you'll say no.
I think it's good too, but I mean, what I'm just looking at, unless they tear the residential section down and do it as a service area and parking, I don't know where they're going to come up with it.
So you would scratch out 1-2 as, I mean, 21 as well.
I would leave it in there because I think it's an appropriate request that, you know, we should address and point out to the town commissioners later that, look, they should have handicapped parking spaces and parking and delivery, but guess what? They probably don't have enough room. Yeah.
Okay. So 23 has to do with a 6.5-foot fence between their property and the residential use property. It's currently there, and the applicant said they're fine with that. 24 is plantings, which is language out of the grottos, again, to protect the residential neighbors from light and noise and trash and commotion and people and They said they were fine with that. 25 says kitchen outlets to be 35 feet high and, I'm sorry, 30 feet from a residential property and at a height, you know, approximately equal to the roof line, and that's the current situation. And I would just add the brewery pub exhaust as well to conform to...
Is that our condition? Is that a health department condition? Or fire marshal? You know, are we treading in an area that we may not have any authority? I don't know enough about this to, you know, we...
I know that we have in the past required the kitchen exhaust for hammerheads and for what is now the Thai takeout to be elevated.
Well, are we treading on some? I know we may have requested, but are we treading on somebody else's too?
We could add on number 25.
Consistent maybe with the fire and, you know, whatever is consistent with fire requirements. I think, or health department requirements. I don't know how that works.
Possibly, David, you could add right after property line 25 right at the end, maybe, unless this requirement conflicts with
something to that effect.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Then that would give them the out and the condition in case
Problem review or whatever. 26 is, their lighting for the parking area, if it's used as a parking area, has to be consistent with the town code. Is entrances on to the commercial space on the north and east sides of the building kept closed, and they said they're fine with that. I mean, there's only one exit on the commercial side from the commercial space on the north side. Exterior mechanical equipment visible from the street be screened appropriately, and they said they're fine with that. So those are basically, you know, pretty much what we do with all restaurants today. And so then conditions relative for the brew pub part of the operation. The first was basically, from my understanding and discussions with Fred and what he said today and representation from the applicant, this is all voluntary. And so they have volunteered to do a 7-barrel system 5 days a week, not on weekends, and 2 batches a day. And so this would be, you know, I see no reason to do anything other than amend this to be what they have voluntarily put forward.
Is that enforceable, correct?
Well, I'm going to have to give that some thought between now and next week. I've given you my suggestion that if they make it a condition of their permit, that it's enforceable. I mean, if they say we'll operate under these conditions, then I think you can grant them a permit that says that you may only operate under those conditions.
No, you're saying they grant a permit. I'm sorry, who do you mean?
I may have misspoken. If they make an application that describes their use as being limited in some fashion, I think you can grant the permit and incorporate that limitation, even if it's stricter than what the law would say. I mean, you could tell somebody who's operating a daycare facility that they have to close sooner than the state law would require them to close, maybe. I mean, that might be an analogy.
So if we grant them a zoning permit, is that what you're
talking about? Conditional use permit.
Conditional use permit under these conditions. It is enforceable, even though the state allows them a more generous.
If they volunteer.
If they voluntarily submit to that.
Would they have to submit that with their application to the ABCC? That use? Would that be part of their application, their current license from the ABCC?
Well, I think the ABCC could tell them that they can do more. And then the question will be, you know, whether they try and do more and whether we can enforce this provision against them. That's the question you're asking. Aaron.
Okay, so.
And I tend to think yes, but I'm going to.
So.
I'm sorry, Fred, do you tend to think yes?
I tend to think that yes, you may enforce your conditional use the conditions of your permit, even if they're more restrictive than state law requires, if the applicant voluntarily submits to those restrictions.
Okay.
So that's my off-the-cuff answer.
So there would have to be some type of I guess these would be...
Well, this ordinance.
This ordinance would be the document that would enforce it, and they would have to sign off on it. If not, we don't have it.
Right.
Well, they wouldn't... They don't really have to sign off on it. I mean...
It is what it is.
It's the law for this property. Now, is it as clear-cut as other provisions in this ordinance? You know, maybe not, but it's something that I'm going to get back to you on for next week.
Thank you.
Okay. So 30 basically says the operation of any and all brewery pub functions within a restaurant in Dewey Beach shall only be permitted upon approval by the town commissioners and appropriate ABCC licenses and other federal, state, and local regulatory agencies. And it then has a final sentence which we may or may not wish to scratch out that says, if required to minimize negative impacts on the town's wastewater treatment facility, the brewery operation shall be fitted with a surge or a holding tank of sufficient size to provide for pretreatment of the brew house's wastewater and or slow release into the sewer system and wastewater plants. And my feeling is that if they need to get approval from the wastewater treatment facility, that the wastewater treatment facility will require them to do whatever they require to do, and we could probably delete this as not part of our authority, but part of the wastewater treatment plant's authority.
I'll agree with you.
You know, here's our wastewater treatment expert.
Well, because the county would impose pretreatment requirements if there are pretreatment requirements for a brew pub. Yeah, that'd be part of their compliance. So.
Fine. So then we get 31 has to do with year-round, which is perhaps not enforceable as year-round, but so I will amend this just to be consistent with the state code in terms of days a week. I believe, Fred, can we require them to be open 7 days a week during the summer? Or can we only require them to be open 6 days a week, 5 days a week, six if they're open on Sundays? You're saying...
What is your interest in requiring them to be open?
Having a fine craft food establishment in Dewey Beach that's going to be, you know, that I can go to
and we're going to hold...
Can you shut them down for being shut down? You know, can you pull their permit for not being open?
Fine. So this will be changed to comply with the state code of 5 days, six if they're open on Sundays. But I believe that we can say, and they have agreed to, that brewing operations shall not be conducted when the restaurant's not open.
Can I just throw in a question while we're talking about the brewing restaurant? What time can they start serving beer in the morning?
Whatever the state says in terms of their liquor licensure.
Does anyone know? I mean, if they plan it open for breakfast at 6 o'clock, can they start serving beer then?
Well, you might ask the question about any of the restaurants in town. Do they serve,
Bloody Marys
or something with breakfast?
Well, I just want to know. I mean, for my own evaluation of whether this fits into the town's character, and I want to know what time can they start serving beer.
I don't know the answer.
I mean, Hammerhead's used to be open for breakfast at 8, but I mean, I don't.
But they can't start serving till 9.
Okay.
Serving. Alcohol.
Alcohol,
tomorrow.
We don't know about beer, though.
Well, it's alcohol.
Beer and alcohol is the same.
I thought this had a different...
No.
Okay. I'm learning all this on the brewery.
Well, alcohol.
I agree.
Okay.
So possibly 9, but we don't know.
Oh, 9.
It is 9. Yeah. You've answered my question. They can't serve beer till 9.
Every place I've ever been.
Okay. So if they serve...
Even the Legion.
Are you sure? Not the reason I've been in. So they can open up for breakfast at 6 and serve food between 6 and 9, and 9 they can
no
turn
the alcohol beverage to after 9.
Okay.
Okay. So 32, you know, kind of tried to memorialize their statements that they wanted to serve craft food. I suspect we can't enforce that they serve gourmet, locally sourced meals. But we can require that as per Delaware State Code that there's a definition of meals, which seems that we can memorialize that in our code and enforce that in our code.
I don't understand that. I'm sorry.
There's state regs about meals. I mean, a restaurant must serve complete meals. You can't serve salads and sandwiches.
Just salads and sandwiches.
You can't serve just salads and sandwiches and be a restaurant. Okay. Now, I don't know whether we can enforce that or whether that we have to, whether the ABCC enforces
what's
that.
What's the sample menu?
Well, I just want to be clear that the public are...
And that's where we're going through this.
You know, I think a lot of people feel like, well, we're going to get, you know, the fine foods and, you know, to go along with...
We have no control over it.
We have no control over it, so that should be clear to the public and to the town commissioners that we can't really make them sell filet mignon and... Right.
And Fred, can we hold them to, you know, there's a statement here that they're going to serve food as demonstrated in the sample menu that they submitted to us as a sample menu. And your point is that...
menus change all the time.
Well, but does the type of food change all the time? And I guess you can't make them serve cakes and pies if they don't want to serve cakes and pies or the business model changes.
Yeah,
fine.
I would discourage you.
So they can bring in processed food from Sysco and throw it in the microwave and just give you chicken breast versus what we think would be fresh cut beef.
I don't think you can tell them they can be a restaurant only if they're a really good restaurant.
Okay, I can understand. Because here's what I'm saying, it's because words on the street that we're going to get fine meals here and that's what they're expecting to see when we go in there, but.
Right, and the applicant has said that they have an intention of doing more than the minimum and pairing craft foods with craft beer, but I don't think it's, and I think that's fine for your consideration, but I don't think that that's a condition that you should have to apply. Right?
Or consider when we evaluate the proximity of this and everything else. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's a restaurant.
You know, it's unfortunate because I mean, it seems to me we're making some concessions in some zoning concessions, some change in use. We should get something. You know, we give up something. We should get something. This seemed like something that
we're
getting.
I think what we're getting is an understanding of the law, what we can do, what we can't do.
I think that's it.
And maybe it's clearing up things in everybody's mind.
I think so. And of course, we have no control if this property is sold or the license is sold, that we have no control over what the next applicant cooks.
You do have the certificate of compliance process, which says if there's a bona fide transfer.
So 33 is if there's any change in ownership. So it says a request to expand the brewery pub operations or revocation of any Delaware ABCC or town license, then a new conditional use application shall be required. And I suspect I need to scratch out the request to expand the brewery operations because it is from what they have voluntarily agreed to. Mm-hmm. So I think if they want to expand it, that they should have to come back.
It would also be approved by the town. That plan would be approved.
Right.
So if they expand from that, they have to come back.
Right. But I think that this is valid in thinking about it more than 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. 34 is that the brewery function shall be designed and operated so as to have no odors, and the brewery equipment shall conform to industry standards, and the applicants guarantee that the resulting emissions will have no offensive odors and be contaminant free. All of which are statements that they representations that they have made, and I would add to this that they will fit their brew kettle, if that's the right word, with a condenser to, as part of their process to eliminate odors, which is a representation in their application package. that that is the approach that they're going to take to minimize odors, and so I think we could include that. 35 is if they fail to deliver this guaranteed no odor performance, that the brewery function is closed down until they can bring it into operational compliance with this guarantee. Fred, do we have this authority?
Well, I'd like to consider that between now and next week.
Okay. I mean, if they are guaranteeing that there will be no odor and there are odors, then I think they're in violation of their, you know.
But, you know, the terms we're using here, you know, results in nuisance emissions, you know, in whose judgment is this emission a nuisance? It's not an easily measured, problem. You know, all the problems we have enforcing noise ordinances, which are noises are easier to measure than. Although I mean, these emissions, I think they can be measured.
They can be measured.
People, but I don't know that we have been in this business before, so I definitely have questions about.
Will you think about that? Because if we have no enforcement, then I mean the fact that they guarantee that they are odor free means nothing.
Well, you're a scientist on this. Can you measure an odor whether it's coming from fried chicken or beer?
Sure.
You can?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm asking. So if you get an odor outside, you can determine the source of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you know, it's not going to be enough to say we detect something. You know, this air smells different than it would if this use weren't here. It's got to be an intrusion somehow. And then you get into a very gray area. How much of an odor should be permissible, and at what point has the applicant gone beyond that?
And can they, in their offense, measure that against, say, another use in the approximate area and say, okay, well, up here we have a place that steams crabs all day long, and we're smelling crabs coming off. Happen to stop us from
chicken on chicken
and emitting an odor from brewing when I've got chicken heads crabs, which I don't mind, but
no, I know.
Coming off, how can you enforce that? Or I'm asking you.
You're asking the right questions.
So there's a possibility that when the town commission review this, we can't enforce their odor easily, or odor emission easily.
Well, they've agreed to use a device, Your plan is to put it in the ordinance and say that it's got to be functional or functioning appropriately.
And that's the end of all we can enforce.
Now, well, if they are, just like anyone else, if they are creating a nuisance on that site, irrespective of this conditional use permit, there are remedies available to the town. There's already a nuisance. There's certainly a general reference in the code to prohibiting anyone from creating a nuisance, and they would be violating that. To the extent, though, that they're violating their conditional use permit, that's trickier because this standard is potentially not specific enough to be enforceable. It doesn't mean that they can create as much nuisance as they want once you permit them to begin, because there are criminal and civil penalties for creating a nuisance.
So, Fred, could we...
They're on a fine as opposed to having their permit pulled, and that's the decision.
And if you were to litigate their side, for instance, you would come in and say, well, chicken eggs are steaming crabs, and that's okay. That's not a nuisance, but yet I'm admitting over there.
But you could look at how closely chicken eggs is located to residential uses and say it's more appropriate down there to be doing this. But we don't think chicken eggs should go at the Theo's Bubba's location.
Okay.
Could we? So this is currently cast in that they'll close the brewery operation. If their equipment starts to malfunction, maybe that they will respond properly when notified by the town that there is a nuisance to resolve that?
Well, it's just that the nuisance itself, that term is vague. So we're attempting to enforce a term that is by its very nature vague.
I was just suggesting that we put in language that said they respond to it promptly rather than, your point is if it's a nuisance, there's a process and the process.
What's a nuicance?
That's it.
We have a noise ordinance if it exceeds certain decibels, and we can prove, if we can prove where that noise is coming from, mm-hmm. then you can enforce it, but you don't have a nuisance level for odor.
So we're likely to scratch this out, but Fred, you'll give us some guidance on this.
So there's a possibility.
So 30.
This could fit into a category of something you leave in, recognizing that it's. I don't think that's a great way to.
I mean, if it's not enforceable, I see no reason to put it in because it misleads the public.
We're guaranteeing the public that we're going to make this not an odorless, but a facility that does not emit odors, and we can't really enforce that.
We can't enforce that.
So they should know that.
I mean, they're representing they will be odor free, but we have no way to enforce that. You'll give us some guidance on this. So 36 basically is defining, what is acceptable in terms of brewery area to be qualified under accessory use, and it's 25%. And, I don't care if the number is 15% or 30%. 25 seemed a reasonable number, and if we can have further discussions or maybe get public input into that, but.
Any of these standards, like this one, I'm gonna look at to make sure we're not beyond our authority.
But I think the question is what is accessory? And apparently there are some issues about in the International Building Code about what relative floor area for accessory uses versus primary uses.
I think we should be very careful putting a percentage number at that time because we might be violating the International Building Code's percentage and getting ourselves into that position or increasing what the International Building Code took. Just like this.
But that's a very good point. So what happens if that happens? We cannot give relief to the applicant from the strict application of the building code. So. If we offer a more lenient standard than the building code suggests, they still have to comply with the stricter standard.
And the town will be violating their building code in general because it complies with the International Building Code. So we would be giving them.
But we wouldn't be giving them anything because they would still be required to build consistent with the building code.
Well, then why put any percentage in there other than what's applicable by the town code, which is the International Building Code?
Well, do we know there's an applicable standard?
We do. Mm-hmm.
What is it?
Is it 10% or 15% of the growing area has to not exceed more than 10 or 15% of the restaurant area? I believe that's it. We were given information by what I consider a qualified expert in this area that I can't ignore. I mean, I can't decide to get this. He states that in this use here, a tavern bar or restaurant qualifies in the sentencing group A2 per the IBC. A factory use group F2 would be correct use group for a facility that produces beverages up to and including 16% alcohol. Thus, there are two specific groups. Actually, then it comes down to that if you are in the F2 use group, you could be considered an accessory use group to the A2, but only if the F2 use, which is the brewery, is less than 10% of the total facility. Then we use as an example. So if you have a facility that's 5,000 square feet, you couldn't use more than 10% of that for your brew area.
Where is this now? This is $0?
Is it
that's the International Building Code.
Okay.
I think the county, you know, when the county reviews these plans, they'll be looking at those things. We're not.
I agree, but what I'm concerned about is putting a percentage in here that we know right. There's a good possibility to contradict the town's use of the international building code.
Well, but to some extent, my understanding is that the international building code defines the construction standards, and as opposed to the particular use standard. So if you are under 10% of a manufacturing, if less than 10% of your restaurant is manufacturing whatever, brewing in this case, then you could use the construction standards for restaurants rather than the construction standards for breweries.
I'm honestly not versed in the IBC to say construction versus use. The only thing I would feel comfortable with is we just referred to the IBC code for this use, whatever category it falls in, A2 or F2. Because if we do, there's a possibility that we're contradicting what the town has adopted as their building code, the IBC. It's clear. It's the same thing as we were
okay.
Building anything, and we determined.
Fred, that. Can we ask you to
just say that any construction on the site has to be consistent with the international building code?
Yeah, not set a percentage like 25%.
Well, I mean, this was to this was to somehow particular language was to get around the salad factory from. Taking a leasehold in Minuteman Press and putting in a brewery pub that's a facetious statement to some extent, but I mean, that would be a 35-seat restaurant with a full-blown brewery pub associated with it. You know, how do you define what is a secondary or accessory use? And, I mean, there's standard ways of doing that in my mind. One has to do with floor area and one has to do with revenue streams. You could be staff associated with each of those or it could be customers. And so this was an attempt to, quantify this notion of accessory use.
It's not coming across that way then.
Well, we are operating in the IBC. And restaurants falls in two categories under the IBC. And then you have the F2, which is the factory use, which is an accessory use to the A2. I don't know why we would go any further than to say we have to, and Sussex County adopts it, we have to comply with the IBC on the use of the percentage of the floor.
Fred, would you think about that? Because I believe if we go with 10% as a definition of floor area for these different uses, that will disqualify this applicant from an accessory use as their.
I think, in all fairness, what we're doing here too is giving these people some heads up information. That could come down the road later on, and they should be considering it now in their due diligence. They better examine this IBC code before they start spending money on the rest of their applications. As a heads up, and I'm not, I just think we're giving them a courtesy, going beyond what many planning commissioners have done, because they could fall back on that code and maybe disqualify them, maybe not. But why not give them the heads up now? Why not put it in our conditional use? We operate under the IBC, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even for swimming pools and fences and those windows, you replace
well,
the windows.
Guess what? You touched on something there where Sussex County has changed some parts of the building code and adjusted and lowered standards.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that's
they have a right to do that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
but haven't they adopted the 2013 IBC?
Yes.
Yeah, but and that was somewhat lower in some instances than the
standards.
But they've accepted the 2013 IBC.
Right.
The county hasn't lowered the standards from the 2013 IBC.
But if you lower standards, but 2013 for everybody,
right.
So we'd have to consider that.
Right.
So I mean, as a heads up.
No, but I think Bill's point is that the 2013 IBC is in some cases a lower standard than the 2012.
Correct.
But the county doesn't.
What standard do you operate under, 2012 or 2013?
2013, which
adopted. Put on there the 2013 IBC code.
Well, maybe you should just say county requirements. I mean, you know, we're getting specific in the areas.
Well, then the notion here was...
You know, we don't have IBC in front of us.
We have the obligation...
The notion here was to provide for the applicant, for us, for future applicants, a metric under a quantitative, clear metric what qualifies an accessory use or not an accessory use. And for our zoning, and if it's appropriate to use the IBC metric, which has to do with, I believe, construction standards rather than zoning per se, is that an appropriate metric to use? Is it inappropriate to use some other metric? Then the question is, what's the appropriate number to put in there? But I would ask Fred to think about this some. Is there some way we can make it other than, you know, looking under a rock to see whether you like what's there or not? I mean, I'm trying to define...
Well, the way of looking at it, can the Planning Commission make changes to the zoning regulation without, well, say to an applicant, you don't have to do this, you don't have to follow this regulation. Within their realm of authority, does that have to be a board of adjustment?
It would have to be a board of adjustment.
So if we deviate from what's already a law, we can't do that. They have a means of going somewhere and saying, look, we can't follow this law. It's a hardship, it's arbitrary, it's capricious, whatever.
I've asked Fred
need a variance.
Right. I've asked Fred to think about this. I mean, it seems to me that accessory use as a zoning issue could be different than accessory use from a construction issue.
Mm-hmm. It is different.
And
from a use, you know, from the state's perspective is that it's, you know, whatever we do in this regard is going to be held up against the jurisdiction of the ABC. And if it's apparent that we are trying to determine what the minimum requirements are going to be for a restaurant, to see to it that this is a restaurant and not a brewery, then we're probably in the area where we're not permitted to regulate, because the determination of whether something is meets the requirements of a restaurant in this environment, in this arena we're in, is a determination made by the commissioner of the ABC.
So your point is that we are left with the fact that this must be a secondary use but cannot put any metric on what that means. And so we can provide no guidance to future applicants under this.
It's a restaurant. It's a restaurant. And if it's...
Okay, so we will delete 36.
I think anything you do in that regard is going to look like you're infringing on that.
Okay, so 37 is brewery hours of operation and service, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., which they have voluntarily agreed to. 38 is that the entire facility should be equipped with appropriate fire suppression systems, including the brewery areas and the food service areas. 39 is the applicant shall require oversight of the brewery operations by a trained and certified brew operations engineer. And Fred, your point is that we can't enforce that.
I was reading that behind. Are you on 39?
Yeah.
Applicant shall require oversight. You can't. That's not our jurisdiction.
David, on 37. Just a suggestion. They can't maintain their equipment outside of those times, maybe unless there's an emergency situation. You know, it's up to you if you want to add that in.
It's already added. Right. It's that's a good catch.
Something happens.
I mean, clearly if there's an emergency, there's an emergency. No outdoor storage shall be allowed. This includes trash and stuff. I mean, an alternative to this would be just require that they, that all trash be, in sealed storage, and that their dumpster be moved back from the, property line and be appropriately fenced in, which is something that we have done in the past for, I mean, Hammerheads and Grottos and other applicants who've, I mean, I don't think it's appropriate to have a dumpster and other trash sitting at the curb of, you know, a resort residential neighborhood leading to the beach. I mean, I'm, you know, I would be open to either of those alternatives. And Marty wants to know if they're, I mean, apparently some places put all of their spent grain in sealed barrels. And I think that that's, you know, good practice. That
our Hill Brewery, that's their more of a standard operation. They put it in sealed, separate containers other than what they use for the restaurant waste. And then a person comes in, like a farmer, and picks it up and takes it and reuses it. But it's not mixed in with the normal trash can.
I mean, I would like to see the town get to the point, and I realize that, I mean, maybe this is policy rather than zoning, that we don't have trash out on the sidewalks. I mean, originally this was cast as no outdoor storage of trash, which would mean it would have to be stored inside except when collected. The applicant seemed to imply that they were okay with that.
They did?
They did. I mean, I realize the plans keep showing the dumpster, but...
You're telling them to store all their trash inside a facility? Are you kidding me? I just don't see that as being at all reasonable or prudent for any business.
Okay.
You know, we've never required any restaurant to store all their food and trash inside the building. Can you imagine?
So would you be okay with asking them to move their dumpster back from the property line and to fence it off with some kind of an ornamental fence and...
We've done that in the past with others. I don't think that's unreasonable. Okay. I don't think that's unreasonable, but to say that no storage of waste, that just...
You know, that's standard, why we're talking about
standard this. Standard site plans designate the area where the dumpster's going to go with the fencing around
right.
So it just can't be wheeled up and down.
That's
part
right.
Of it. So what we can do is ask them the site plan if they designate where that trash is being housed in the landscape front.
Okay. So I'll change this a little.
But designate the trash area. I think we should talk about, though, that the waste grain not be put into the typical dumpster, because that dumpster gets picked up maybe once a week or once every 2 weeks when it gets filled up, and, you know, you're going to... I don't know. Dave, you're the expert on what would happen to this grain if it sits out in an open dumpster for 5 days when it's 90 degrees plus.
We'll have more feral cats in town because there'll be...
That's something we should think about, whether
it's
we should...
smell from crab parts.
Oh, God, that's awful, too.
Okay, so 41...
Could we require that they put their grain in sealed plastic bags?
I think that's dangerous. You know, I think we're talking about regulated manufacture of process.
If you look at our town ordinance right now, our trash services require that all trash be placed in plastic bags and then placed in a rigid container.
Mm-hmm.
So you're just not dumping raw material, and that's an existing ordinance.
Right.
Now that's for residential. We haven't done anything for commercial.
Oh, okay.
Well, I think as a planning board, we can't bypass the possibility that this waste grain is going to present a unhealthy situation in that area, and can we control it, or can we regulate how it's stored, if it's stored outside, and how?
because this is a new use, storing outside grain. Nobody can really have stored outside use grain. Mm-hmm. I mean, if someone...
Well, the town has already moved, at least in residential, which should be less restrictive than commercial, that you can't put any trash in a plastic bag. Unless it's in a rigid sealed container. Because, I mean, you have the birds sitting there picking it up.
What I'm thinking is the separation of the grain from the other waste because of the time it could possibly be spent left out there in the conditions.
Right. Okay.
That can we say that it has to be stored in a separate container and removed within so many days?
Okay. So 41 says restaurant deliveries and waste trash removal limited to the hours 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. except for emergencies. It's kind of standard.
We don't have that requirement for commercial enterprises. That's a different thing. We don't have that.
So you would say delete that?
I'm just saying that...
If we don't have requirements,
we don't have requirements. We don't have that requirement for commercial
enterprises. But we put this requirement on...
Residential?
Well, we put this requirement on grottos.
If they accept it, that's great, but I'm just telling you that the residential one is, the pickup is actually no sooner than 8 o'clock and no later than 2 o'clock for trash. I know that because I worked on this. But that's for residential. We don't have these restrictions for commercial.
But don't we have restrictions in... I always thought that there were restrictions in town for the operation of trash trucks in general.
We do for residential.
Just for residential.
We don't have that for commercial.
So do we have to scratch it?
I don't know. I'd have to. That'd be a question more for Fred, but I'm just telling you right now, we've excluded commercial enterprises. We didn't want to go in that area because, you know, they're dealing with massive dumpsters. And right now... You know, they may require more than what the town would require. Some may require 3 or 4 times trash removal a week. We don't know.
So if a resident looks at this conditional use and says, well, that's okay because the trash will be limited between 8 and 6, and they complain it's picked up before 8 or after 6, can we enforce that? I don't want to mislead the public.
Probably not.
I don't want to mislead, reading these conditions and, so.
No more so than what we've got right now with commercial waste removal. You know, none of the hotels or other existing restaurants have to comply with that.
So if they want to collect their trash at 2 a.m., then...
Hey, look, we've had it in the past in the residential. They'd come at 4 o'clock in the morning and start, and people had complaints.
Okay.
So that's why we came to the residential and said, and we got a lot of grief from the waste services.
Okay, 42 is revenue from sales of food and non-alcohol shall constitute more than 60% of the total business revenue. And Fred has said that this is non-enforceable.
You know, I did contact the ABCC board on that, and they said it is, that's what the rule of thumb that they go by. 60%.
It's a rule of thumb, though.
Rule of thumb.
And Fred will tell you, I mean, Fred and I had this discussion yesterday, and Fred will say it's the purview of the commissioner of the ABCC what constitutes reasonable.
Okay, so.
And so I think that that's an unenforceable. Striking at 43.
Well, what you could do is revenue from sales of food must meet ABCC standards.
We can't force that because they're the ones who get to determine what.
And 43, which had to do with revenue from sale of alcohol, is apparently not enforceable.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So then, are we just saying they don't have to justify how much alcohol they're serving versus food?
Not to us.
To us.
Well, Fred shared a scenario with me that if they're selling dollar hot dogs and dollar beers, that the commissioner of the ABCC would likely look at a 60-40 split of revenue to be reasonable as a restaurant. But if they're selling $100 entrees and $1,000 bottles of wine, that you know, a 40-60 split might be a reasonable split for that operation. And
the commissioner's going to take into consideration all the different particular characteristics of that operation and decide what makes for a reasonable.
So reasonable is the word. There is no percentage.
There's no percentage.
So, okay, because I'm not sure I understand this.
If you're selling vintage wine, then you can sell.
Yeah.
Then it's not.
Can we just stay on this for one more minute? Because I've been under this understanding. I think a lot of people have that there's some kind of an audit that
they're
responsible to, and they have to show how much food revenue versus alcohol revenue. They
will be audited within the first 8 months. And the audit will cover the first 6 months of their experience.
Okay, so there will be audits.
Yes.
And but there is no percentage that they have to work within.
The rule of thumb is 60-40, but that standard could be relaxed given the particulars of that operation. So if they got some off-site sales, that could skew the percentage. If they're menu items are very, they're going to look at the menu and they're going to do an analysis.
From Mr. Wiest, I asked a question. That was a question I asked him.
Where's your answer?
Right up here.
There will be an audit. If the audit doesn't produce 60-40, then it could be referred to the enforcement arm of the ABC, in which case the commissioner would sit back and wait and find out whether there is a prosecution. If there's a prosecution, the commissioner would make a determination as to whether, you know, these guys are actually operating a restaurant or it's just a restaurant.
When I attended that alcohol violation hearing, it was an education. They said if the town, there was an area, not in Dewey, but it was another jurisdiction. They said if the town felt that they had somebody who was, you know, was in question about the food and alcohol sales, that if we filed a complaint, they would come in and look at it and do an audit. But I don't think they do. I think it's rare that they do this. It didn't sound like they did this on an ongoing basis.
So, well, for new establishments, you will get audited.
Yeah.
Some discretion.
But if they're selling burgers and beer, it would be looked at in one way, and if they're selling burgers and craft beer, it might be looked at. They might decide that a different ratio is the right split.
Because the same amount of beer
costs more.
Yeah, it just costs more. Right.
Which is why we were asking for their price, not their you know, some kind of a business plan perspective of what they're charging, so we could get a better grasp on it, which we didn't get. I don't feel as good about the 60% food, 40% alcohol sales I did before. You know, controlling the operation of this facility.
I mean, we've been asking these questions. The town's been operating under certain assumptions for, you know, as long as I've been involved in town, and we've been asking these questions for the last 6 weeks. And I think we now have some clear guidance that we were operating under incorrect assumptions.
Yeah. There's going to be a meeting next week with the Alcohol Beverage Commission that our town manager set up just to. Some of these questions are going to be coming up too.
So,
but for the purpose of what we are presenting to the public, we have to be very careful
right.
that we don't say 60% food, 40% alcohol. Right. We've got to be very careful. Right.
And so 44 had to do with off-site retail sales for off-site consumption, and we have no control over that. And 45 has to do with wholesale sales for off-site consumption, and that's going to be deleted because we have no control over that. And 46 has to do with sales, and we have no control over that, so that's going to be deleted. And 47 had to do with outgoing delivery service, and my understanding is we can enforce that for food, but we can't enforce that for alcohol. And
I think you can enforce, I mean, you're not specifying what's being delivered. There's, you know, if deliveries after a certain hour, I mean, you shouldn't really care whether they're delivering alcohol or delivering food or receiving deliveries of the components to make beer versus receiving the vegetables and meats they need to prepare meals. What you care about is that there's truck traffic, and truck traffic can be bothersome to people who are nearby.
Right.
I think that's got to be your attitude. But you shouldn't be trying to draw distinctions between what's coming and going, but when. You know, it's
when and where.
When and where. And if truck traffic is a legitimate concern, given the nature of the location of this property and the community nearby, then you should regulate.
So, Fred, if that is a concern, can we limit, can we put conditions on the delivery and of and trash removal? I mean, we could basically.
I think you could.
Because of that, we could say that no more than two deliveries a day, something to that extent. We could do that.
I think you want to be reasonable, but yeah. I mean, if you're reasonably promoting the best, you know, the health, safety, and welfare of the surrounding community, then yes.
Because that is a concern. I mean.
So this 47, no outgoing deliveries, was an issue with grottos. And
you mean carry out?
No, it had to do with pizza. You know, it had to do with delivery vehicles picking up pizzas and going out and delivering them to people.
Well, that was an easy one because they don't do it in Dewey Beach.
Well, my point is they don't do it in Dewey Beach because they're not permitted to do it in Dewey Beach.
As I recall, they agreed, David. Because it's being done from the Rehoboth site delivers. They don't deliver from
there. Because they were never permitted to deliver from the Dewey site.
That I don't recall.
I mean, that's been in place for 10 years or something.
Hmm. I don't recall that.
When the applicants saw this the first time around, they asked that, they said, that's fine, we don't want to deliver food, but if we apply the same notion, you know, delivery, outgoing deliveries, I mean, as I think they want to operate, they're going to want to ship, whatever 75% of their production is, they're going to want to ship that out. And if we say they can't, then I don't know as if that is really what we want to say, but I mean, can we say no outgoing deliveries, just period? In which case they can't wholesale.
But you would allow, I mean, if you're allowing trucks in, right? Don't you allow trucks in? And those trucks have to leave, and they make noise when they leave, whether they're loaded or unloaded.
Well, I think the issue, I mean, certainly that's a fair point. I mean, the issue with Grotto was deliveries coming in, you know, come in like once a day and the truck pulls up and they do their thing, and that's during the day. And the pizza deliveries were, and so maybe this is the issue, the pizza deliveries were going out at, midnight, 1 a.m., 2 a.m. Right. Cars coming, slamming doors, people picking up, loading up the trucks, a little whatever. And so maybe we could certainly say no outgoing deliveries after 6 p.m. So if they're going to...
I think it's an area of inquiry. You could ask them how often are they going to be sending trucks out? I mean, given the limitations on their production, this may or may not be a real big issue.
Okay, so, I think we have a right to, and that we could enforce, no outgoing deliveries before 8 a.m. in the morning and after 6 p.m.
I would be as concerned about deliveries going out 12 o'clock in the afternoon when the streets are crazy, people getting in and out of the streets, and you've got bicycles going in and out of the streets, and people walking.
Well, that's all part of their delivery and... Yeah, that's all part
but
of...
But I'm saying their... you can find it before 8 o'clock. That's probably the least dangerous time. On the street, and again, it goes back to, is this, you know, there's their delivery system in general.
affect the character of this neighborhood negatively or not.
Right, right. And so...
What I'm trying to say before 8 o'clock and after 5 o'clock doesn't, in my mind, cover the areas of the days of the time that it's more dangerous than the others.
So... I will capture that in our request. There are, I believe, two items we're going to ask them to prepare to discuss with us the next time, and that's one of them. And so most of the issues under requirements to be addressed, I'm just going to delete because we've discussed that there are two items that we are going to ask them to address, and one of the commissioners asked me to, wanted the applicant to clarify that what appears to be the banquette seating area was in fact a six-top banquette seating area or a four-top banquette seating area, just so we knew what we were getting with that, and that doesn't seem unreasonable to ask them to clarify at the next meeting. And the other one had to do with restrooms, whether...
Where are you, David?
These aren't on that anywhere.
Oh.
And, you know, the feeling was if this is something that is encouraging, you know, the production and consumption of beer, that two restrooms is not sufficient, and I don't feel we have the authority at this point to require them to bring their restroom facilities up to current building code. And that might actually be a hardship given what we see as the configuration of the property.
But I think it speaks to the legal nonconformity area of the building that we can give our thoughts on. We might not have the power to regulate it, but you know, in just sizing up the building as it is and the operation that's going in now versus what was there, maybe we could give in our opinion that the restrooms
are inadequate.
Are inadequate. Just another thing to think about. We didn't wash over it, but you know. Why not?
But I mean, short of saying that they're inadequate, I would be hesitant to require them as a condition of approval.
I'm not saying we require, but we pointed out. The commissioners aren't here, but you know, these are things that we're discussing that could be brought out to them to think about.
So we might mention that in our report.
In our general report of what we feel about this project and why. We might think it's super. We might think it's, you know, marginal or meets the median.
Well, restrooms has always been an issue in town, so, I mean, that won't be... I mean, someplace where they're encouraging people to linger and drink beer, I think, is...
So it basically has the same restroom facility as the Sunrise Restaurant, one with two bathrooms.
Okay.
And they're drinking.
What?
67 capacity at the Sunrise, and they're drinking.
Okay.
And they're drinking.
And no alcohol.
No alcohol. That's a good point.
But you know, once I have four or five cups of coffee, it's...
Shut up. Just keep going.
So it's now 2:15, and I've kept everybody longer than intended, but I think it's been a good discussion. Mm-hmm. I think it's been very productive. I will update the draft, get it posted online, hopefully by Monday, the draft ordinance. I will...
The weather's nice this weekend, you may not want to do that.
working at the beach.
Yeah,
exactly.
And we will... I will send an email to the applicant... including the updated draft ordinance, and that we expect them to make a presentation on their operations, including the two issues that we've addressed specifically here, and any other thing that they feel is important for us to take into consideration.
Are you going to comment on any of the on the site plans that have been submitted? Are you going to address that as to the... you know, what they have sent in versus what we've requested and what we feel is needed?
I was not going to address the fact that we felt we didn't get what we asked for.
But we've talked about that, and, you know,
But we have decided that we want two particular responses addressed. Bill's going to want a survey at some point, but it wasn't clear to me he wanted a certified survey or that
but
he
that's
wanted.
That's what Bill wants.
Right.
This is what we want.
Well, I don't sure it's what you specifically request. I'm not sure that everybody wants what you're asking for.
I agree. I understand that. Okay. I'm just asking Dave if he's going to include my statements at that.
I would be willing to include that some of the commission, but not all of the commission, would like to see. Accurate drawings of the existing structure as well as accurate drawings of the proposed structure that we can compare.
On a property plan? On a plan.
Property
plan certified by an engineer or surveyor.
I mean, they are going to balk at the, I know because we've had this discussion already, they're going to balk at the requirement to have it certified. I'm sure that the applicant will sign that is an accurate representation.
What board do I take the applicants to? The engineer's board, the surveyor's board, the architect board to verify their competency, what they did? What board do I take them to?
Either professional engineers board or professional
engineers. No. They're not professional engineers.
Well, I don't know what you want to do, Mike. I'm not looking for any additional information myself, but, they're not professional engineers, so I'm not sure what board you would take.
What I'm doing is I'm giving you a loaded question.
Right.
If they make a mistake or give us inaccurate information, this is the best I could do.
Well, I think that we make that as a comment in our report, that this is based on the information we gave, which was not certified.
Possibly you might want to add on there that if different kind of information comes in, I'm going to take this out loud. If they finally bring in certified information and it presents based upon that, it now gives us a new question or new information that might change our mind. Then I think we should be able to use this new information to say, okay, now instead of saying we've already given you approval of your site plan, but now we have something different and we can't use it. That's what I'm afraid of.
Right, and I guess
I understand what you're saying. So the real question comes in. We look at a site plan and we're okay with it, let's say. Okay. Goes to the county. They look at it and they say, you know what? This we're not okay with this. You got to do this. You got to do that. So we've given a conditional approval with the understanding that they meet the county requirements. The county requirements may have changed all of these things around. So where do we stand at this point? As far as the plan, is that where you're going? I mean, do you want to have another avenue to address the issue after the fact?
Well, primarily I want accurate information right now.
Yeah. But it may not be accurate, though, if it goes to the county and the county makes some changes.
Well,
then we know what we will prove.
No, it will be. If an architect goes in there and measures, or even an engineer, goes in there and measures that building up and comes up with measurements, and he certifies those measurements, I feel good about it. Either one of them, okay?
So...
But I do have to say that I think it's important for us to know why it is that we're requiring this level of certification. What is the zoning justification for asking for something other than what we've received? And what is our concern? It can't just be that we need a higher level of accuracy. It has to be because we have a concern that something is wrong.
Well, they've shown on their diagrams a minimal use, so to speak, on the north side of the building as part of their plans. But we already have the possibility that they can't use that side of the building, and it's encroaching on someone else's property.
But let's say it is encroaching.
Okay.
Let's say they produce a survey that shows an encroachment.
Okay.
You're assuming from that 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 limits that encroachment, then prohibits their continued use of
that. Most use. That's a microbrewery on that side now.
Well, I'm asking, that's why I asked, are we worried about there being a fire exit that will remain open? Or, you know, an emergency exit that will remain open? Because if we're not, and we're not worried about a entranceway that actually serves the restaurant and the patrons, and it doesn't promote safety, then what is our concern? Because if that encroachment has been there for 20 years, and there's been continuous use of it, then Exxon may have no rights whatsoever.
Well, they'd have to go to court to prove adverse possession.
But they may have no interest in doing anything.
Well, they might, and they might not. These are things we don't have on the table yet.
Well, we are now going to go to Exxon and ask them, are they going to enforce some rights? You know, the surveyors can differ, too, about, you know, it's all based on legal descriptions, which can be all, you know, depends on which deed you look at. Even a certified survey is not always going to put to rest every possible issue. I think until we have a problem, and until we can enunciate or explain what that problem is, then I think the question is, are we holding these guys to a different standard than anybody else?
I don't think we are.
Well, I think that
can be proven throughout the state with typical site plans shown in the state list, and what determination surveyors have to make on their accuracy. I don't think we are, honestly, Dan. I think it's bogus that they're not giving us certified plans showing where that property is. It's not a big deal. It's not a big cost to show where that building is when that property is certified. It isn't a lot of money. And we don't know where the exits for the residents, how people get in and out of their residential areas right now. We don't know where they are. There's a lot of issues that come to my mind of why we should have at least a certified plan. And we're not asking any above standard. You know, it's all throughout the state. Every municipality I've worked in, at the minimum, would require that. At the minimum. If I felt like we were, you know, required to do an officer survey, I'd say no, that's we don't need an officer survey. We don't need title examinations. We don't have to go through all the exceptions and say everybody said I don't want an officer survey. I want a boundary survey. Okay. I don't want a structural engineer to come in and tell me that the walls are still good and the floor is good and it'll support this kind of brewery operation. I just want an engineer to come in and verify what the dimensions of that building are. I don't think that's out of anybody's standard throughout the state. I'm not asking for, you know, an architect to come in and determine that an environmental agency come in and determine that there's no hazardous material on that site. I'm not asking
that. Okay, but what I'm asking is, what is the concern and how does it relate to zoning? And I'm not asking you to answer it.
Well,
but I'm saying that you know, I think at some point that those cards need to be laid on the table.
I will pose that we would like it, but are not going to require that they come in with accurate site drawings. For me, from a zoning issue, I mean, I would like to know where the boundaries currently are between the commercial and the residential, and if they're going to change. I mean, from my perspective, I don't care if they move some of the boundaries and use some of the residential space. I mean, as I think Mr. Townsend...
How do you justify their substantial improvement if we don't know exactly what's going on in there? When does that come to,
Bill, this is a question for you.
The substantial improvement comes when they get a estimate of what they're doing, first of all, and what constitutes the substantial improvement that you're talking about. Substantial improvement is expansion, structural, or anything else. Ingredients has nothing to do with substantial improvement.
Right.
Well, you would,
no, but Bill, the point is...
You would have to issue a permit
right.
for that, and the permit is based upon whatever the contractor is saying the cost is. So that's how
that's affected to do the renovations there is what the permit is based on, labor and materials in this town.
If they tear down a wall that was a partition wall between the coffee shop and the other part of the building, and it's also a partition wall between the residential use and the rest of the building, and now they erect a new glass wall that is you know, I guess, bomb-proof or whatever proof that has to be, where that wall was or in another location between, you know, the operation. Is that a substantial improvement?
That's what I'm saying. We don't know what substantial improvement.
Well, I'm just asking you, your opinion. That, I mean, right now there is a wall that divides the old coffee shop from the rest of the restaurant, and apparently there's walls behind that that divide the residential part from the rest of the building. Their plans indicate that's all going to be scrapped, and a new wall is going to be built with glass and whatever else to let people look at the program.
Well, people,
would you consider that substantial?
No, I don't.
I think, I mean, our code defines...
That's not changing the structure of the building.
I mean, I said strength to change the structure, a substantial improvement. You go in and improve something. You've got a bar in there that's all broken down and you know...
I think in terms of our code, and certainly in terms of FEMA's code, substantial improvement means the cost of the improvements are more than 50% of
the value of the structure. And right now, they're not going to have the market value of the structure to the assessed value in the tax records.
Well, no.
I know, that's because
but this is a decision that'll be made by the, by Sussex County and by FEMA. Yeah. And it's not to be made by us, and again, from a planning consideration, I don't think it doesn't matter to me if they have to bring the entire building up to code and elevate the building 4 feet to, I mean, from a zoning consideration, none of that really matters in making a decision on approving this conditional use application or not.
To make you feel better too, Mike, FEMA will review the plans of what's going on there because it's in the ocean block.
They will review
that? Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
FEMA and Denmark.
Well, that's Denmark is FEMA here, yeah. They control flood issues, Denmark does, in the town of Dewey Beach. They regulate out of the they enforce the regulations of FEMA. Denmark does.
Right.
So we don't know whether it's going to be a substantial improvement or not at this point, and we won't know until they generate plans to, you know, and in other jurisdictions, those plans would be required prior to making an application to the zoning commission.
That's my opinion.
For zoning approval, and at least in Dewey Beach, that's not the way things have been done in the past, and I think that's where we're stuck. Any final comments from anybody? I forgot to do a roll call. We have the two Mikes, and Dawn and Jim and myself and Bill Mears and Fred Townsend. Marty couldn't make it because he's out of town, and Chuck McKinney, his term expired earlier this month, and we forgot to acknowledge his 3 years of service on this commission at our February meeting, which was his last meeting. And I would like to apologize to him. I enjoyed working with him and learned a lot from him, and commend him for his input.
His family was recognized. By
his family was recognized. So, a motion to adjourn?
So,
a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.